I don't know, because we don't have enough time. This may be while it's looking for the network, if maybe Adam can go ahead and brief members on the report. I don't know what members do they think.
Bra Eddie, I am agreeing, because members are here, we have joined in the meeting as per the invitation. So Adam can go ahead. That's my view.
Oh, okay.
Please, Eddie, we can proceed if you don't mind.
Oh, okay. No, okay. Mr. Billy?
No, that's fine, Bro Eddie. I think it's a presentation that Shay is as well with. So when he's going, you'll be able to,
yeah, if maybe you can take the ship until he joins.
Okay, I think it's just a presentation by Adam. So can we proceed, members?
Thank you, Chair, Acting Chair. I'll take the lead. This document was distributed to members. These are some of the issues that emerged out of
recording in progress.
The electoral report. And so I'll just briefly go through them. So there was an indication of, you'll remember there was a process that happened last year. We're requesting a delay in the elections to allow for free and fairness. And there was a report that emerged out of this, an inquiry report, indicating that a delayed election would be preferable. But this was only published some time prior to the declaration of the election on the 6th of August. So there was a month, essentially, that the IEC had to table this report to act on it. But they only acted on it 2 days after the minister of local government declared the report. So the question is why they didn't act on the report sooner to bring about a possibly effective delay in the elections. That said, they did manage to pull off the elections fairly well, despite having to proceed on the elections nonetheless. So then secondly, what are some of the notable effects of having condensed the electoral timetable into 42 rather than 76 days? So again, because that's a possible postponement process, the final electoral timetable was shortened significantly. The question is, what impact that had on the actual pulling off of the elections? Within that same electoral timetable, there was only 3 days given to for parties to inspect, object, and have decisions made on those objections on the vote. So the question is if that was sufficient. Then, looking at the statistics that they provided, there are 26.2 million registered voters, of which 68% were of voting age, which represents 68% of the voting age population. And with a turnout of 46%, that means that only 12 million voters, or less than a third, 31% of the voting age population actually voted. So the question is then, five is, does the IEC have data comparing the percentage of the voting age population by age band with those that registered and those who actually vote? And is this used to target have more informed targeting of outreach programs? So given that only a third of the population is the voting age population is actually voting, which segments of the population are underrepresented, both in terms of registering to vote and then actually voting? And then how is this used to target their education? Then six, what is being done to address particularly low voter registration rates in Gauteng? There's only 60% compared to other provinces where there's 80%, like in the Eastern Cape. then why was there a 13% increase in the wards in the Northern Cape where with only a 0.2% increase in registered voters? So there's a table on one of the slides where it indicates the change in wards by percentage and by number. So there was a significant increase in wards in the Northern Cape, but there wasn't a significant change in the amount of registered voters. And do the IEC know what percentage of voters were affected by the splitting voting districts? And how many of them managed to re-register and how many of them that did not re-register tried to vote and were negatively affected? So there were some concerns raised around this during and after the elections. So just a question of what the change in the voting districts, what the impact thereof is. And 9, what are some of the international best practice methods that are not being used to promote increased voter participation? Because we're noticing a decline in both registration and actual voting, as indicated by the polls. And then lastly, what concrete resolution mechanisms are used to address the intra-party conflict before, during, and after elections? So there are these PLC, Party Liaison Committees, various levels, but they indicated that there's an increase in conflict between parties and within parties, which is taking up a lot of their time. So what methods are they using to both address and prevent some of this conflict? So these are just the main issues that I extracted from the report. I don't know if I want to head it back to members. Or, yes, Acting Chair, I'll leave it to you to guide the rest of the program.
Thank you very much, Adam. I'm checking if the Chair has... No, he hasn't. Okay. Can I then over to members, if there's anyone who wants to provide any input instead of just calling out names? Perhaps it'll be easier that way. Any questions of clarity, members, or any input? Members, are you there?
Honorable Clay, this is Honorable Kanyene.
Thank you.
Good morning to you and good morning to all the colleagues that are online. I think the presentation presentation by the content advisor was pretty clear. I am covered, but I'm speaking only for myself. Other members can actually make comments. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanile.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pillai. I agree with Honorable Kanile. Just to thank our content advisor for the summary, and I think we are okay for our meeting at 9. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ruud, anything on your side?
Thank you, Jay. I think the one thing that just jumped out to me about the report and that is about the VMDs and the fact that there doesn't really seem to have been a remedial action or a remedial action plan on that. So that is certainly something that I would like to see in this kind of report. I think it was quite a suspension effect on the election. And it's something that we as a committee need to get an understanding of is not only we understand that it happened and things were rushed, but what has been done to ameliorate that. And then secondly, the issue of the fact that the IEC was given legal advice to go ahead and plan, and it appears that they didn't do that. It appears that they paused, and then only when the Mosoneke report came out and eventually the judgment was to go ahead, that they sprung into action. That caused things like what we saw with the VMD, where people weren't trained and they weren't ready, and people that just thought they were registered to vote couldn't vote. So these are two things that I think are quite important to get an understanding, because these kind of things can't just happen and then there's no remedial action report. How are we going to deal with that? And how are we going to fix that for the future? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Rose. Honorable Tito.
Morning, Chairperson, and morning to my colleagues. Yes, Chair, I think that I've also covered this. When Honorable Ross alluded on the issue of when the voters went to vote on the day of the voting, and then they find out that they were not registered. I think that that was Honorable Ross covered me, but so far today I'm covered with everything. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Romulo Ben.
Good morning, colleagues. Morning, Chair. And thanks for noting me, but I am quite covered from the presentation from the contact advisor. Thank you.
Honorable Jose.
Thank you very much, Comrade Honorable Kilei. I think I am covered, but just adding on what Honorable Tito has said, we just had a by-election recently, I think 2 weeks ago, where, for an example, from the same household, one would find that they've been taken from the station that they used to vote from to another station without even notification, without even being noticed. And in November elections, people were voting at a certain station. Now, 2 weeks ago, they were just noticed by those that were working for their party to say, please come and vote. You are now appearing on the voters' roll of another station. So now my confusion was that how is it really working? The demarcation affects you after you have been, 2 months after you have elected, and you are being shifted to another region without you being notified, and some of the members in your household remain in the station where you used to be. So I'm just adding on what Honorable Tito has just said. Today there's a bit of confusion, and one would really want to understand what is happening. But besides that, Adam's presentation was clear, and I'm covered.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Honorable Lizal.
Yes, in fact, you know, I just wanted to add to what Honorable Ruiz, Tito, and the other colleagues have said. What was very interesting from the presentation was that when you worked through it, they were completely silent on the issue of people who were registered but couldn't vote. And one would have expected them to largely focus on that, because I would have assumed that that was probably the biggest criticism that they got after this election, and what actually caused them some credibility and brand damage was the outcry of people saying we went to go register and we couldn't vote. And so when I worked through the presentation, there was no mention of that. And so I just wanted to share the concern of the colleagues, because I think all political parties had numerous complaints. But yes, in this presentation, it's not touched on. But we will deal with that when we get to meet with them. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Lizal. Then I agree that there are some matters that we've also raised after the election that may not have found itself in the support, and we can be able to raise that. One of the other things that stands out to me, the special votes. I think we had quite a challenge with special votes. We also had challenges with material and those kind of things arising late. So I think those are some of the challenges that we can be able to. But I'm just checking, Chairperson has not yet arrived. Right, Eddie, you want to then guide us, because the chair has not arrived. And I think we are done. Members could at least be able to have a cup of coffee or tea before we start.
Acting Chair, if I can just quickly add, it's Adam here again.
Sure, Adam, go ahead.
Yes, just the other question was, Honorable Kanyile also asked that we look further into the candidates represented today on the decision on the IEC Commissioner. Just to indicate that without going too much into policy or political decisions, there's not much that I can really add other than what's available online. We did go through the interviews, the online interviews and the CVs, and yeah, we'd be remiss to make any further recommendations other than what is fully available. Only to say there was only one issue raised by about one candidate, and it's related to a minor issue in the Equality Court, which didn't cause much issues. Other than that, there's no serious objections we can raise to any of the candidates.
Adam, if you just clarify, what was Honourable Kanyile requesting?
She just indicated that there was only one mention in the summary of the CVs of one complaint against one candidate, but this related to an issue in the Equality Court where the particular expression was used, Afrikaans expression, which one subordinate took offence to, but it was all resolved and there was no major implication for the candidate. It was Mr. Lambini, I think. But other than that, there's nothing to seriously to discredit any of the candidates, other than
sure.
the final candidates being indicated as the most preferable. There's no other necessary distinction between the candidates.
I've acknowledged and I noticed Honourable Ruas and Honourable Kanyile, but let me just come in. So that will mean, Adam, that if there was just one that was mentioned, it means that the others had nothing. That's the reason why it's not mentioned. Would that be correct?
Well, just to indicate that over and above what is indicated in the verbal and oral interviews, we also don't have access to more information than what is publicly available. So I couldn't find any additional issues in my attempts. But that's only me as one individual compared to the Chief Justice of it, the whole judicial commission. So that's, we don't have the same capacity. But they obviously would have done
that. Let's move on. Honourable Ruas and then Honourable Kanyile.
Apologies, Chair. My hand was not mistaken.
Oh, thank you. It's a legacy hand. Honourable Kanyile.
Thank you, Acting Chair, and thank you so much, Adam. I think I was also covered. What I did, I also took some time to go and check the interviews on the YouTube. So because I had a lot of questions earlier on. Then when it was mentioned that the interviews are available on YouTube, I did go and watch the interviews. But I also wish to express my appreciation to Adam for getting back to me. But that matter has been clarified, Acting Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kanyile. Members, can we then move off from this, and we will then meet at 9 with the chairperson, hopefully reach a point where you could get connection. Yeah. Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson.
Chair, welcome back.
Yes, how are you? Morning.
Very well. Just an update. We went through Adam's presentation, and the members have contributed to a few other items which they thought there was an absence of in the report. The one around those who were registered to vote and didn't or wasn't allowed to vote when they found that their names didn't appear on the voters' rolls. And the other one that was raised was where they voted in November in a particular VD And now with a by-election 3 months later, they find that they've been moved to other wards or other cities, in some instances in the same household. Yeah. So I think that was it. And then Adam also just gave input that apart from what was presented in terms of CVs and interviews, there was no other way of finding out any other information. And I think that was clarified. But yeah, that's, we're all good.
Okay. No, thanks. We're struggling with the logistics. So I had to rush to another office of Home Affairs. But I'm on par on the notes. I've gone through the documents, both on the report of local government election and the CVs, and I've gone through the last process that was undertaken by the Feed the Portfolio Committee, which was chaired by Mashile and Chauke, on the issues that are related to the items today. I'm fine, thanks, colleagues. And I hope.
I did indicate that the chair is definitely a forward with everything. Thank you for confirming that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair FM.
Good morning, Mr. Matunzi.
Yeah, it's at 9 o'clock. We have got enough members, and the IEC is also in the meeting. If we can start.
Thank you, Mr. Matunzi. If you can flex the or screen the agenda.
Okay, Chairperson. Are you able to face Chairperson?
Yes.
Yeah, we're starting from number 3, welcome and opening remarks.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mr. Matunzi, and good morning to you. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, the IEC led by Deputy Commissioner Lab. All commissioners present. Morning to the Chief Executive Officer and the entire executive team and all our stakeholders, Home Affairs, the staff and the media components. We are today convening to reflect on the issues which were interacted with the IEC in our previous meetings. Since the local government elections were requested, the report be presented before the committee so that we interact on the issues that arise from the process towards the local government elections and post the elections for members to able to interact with Home Affairs and the public to get a report on the progress, the shortcomings, and how they have responded to some of the issues with the Home Affairs, with the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, has interacted and recommended to the IEC. Secondly, we'll then request Mr. Matunzi later on to outline the process that we're going to take on the item number 8, where we're going to interact with the Chief Justice team reports, which were sent to the team, sent to the speaker and referred to the portfolio committee and tabled to the portfolio committee 2 or 3 weeks ago. And we hope members will interact with this process. We're not going to waste a lot of time. We'll now invite Mr. Matunzi to render apologies with the apologies an introduction by the team. I'm not sure whether the minister or the deputy minister are in attendance. They're in attendance, Mr. Matunzi will indicate, and will introduce the IEC to give us a presentation. Mr. Matunzi?
Good morning, Chair. Yes, there's no apology from members. I've got almost a full complement of members today. And then from the department, the minister is not here and the DG are not here. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. At this stage, I will invite Deputy Commissioner Lab to introduce her team and lead the presentation. Deputy Commissioner Lab.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to you and to the honourable members of the committee. Chairperson, it gives me great pleasure to present to the committee the 2021 elections report, which in our view, the elections were challenging, exciting, but also historic. The Commission really wants to indicate that we take this opportunity to engage with you, to answer questions, and to just generally be able to deliver a report and account. We take this opportunity really seriously. With me are my fellow commissioners, Dr. Nonso Masupu, Commissioner Mosutu Moyepia, and also the team of the executive team of the committee. We which is a commission which is led by the acting CEO, Mr. Shibri. Our CEO is not well at present, and Tendus is against. Mr. Shibri is accompanied by a number of people from the administration, including Ms. Henning, Mr. Mahlangu, and also Mr. Kalembe. Chairperson, there were a number of very different features of this election, and Mr. Shibri will go into some detail in the report, but I wish to single out a couple of highlights. In the first of these is the big question that faced the commission early in 2021, in the midst of the rampaging and deadly Delta variant of COVID-19. We were faced with the question of how and when free elections would be possible. Representations were made to the commission by all of the political parties, as well as other stakeholders, whose usual processes of engagement with citizens, with members, significantly and negatively impacted. While our timetable to hold elections at the time in October 2021 was ongoing, the Commission believes that it would assist us as the Commission, also our country as a whole, to look more deeply into these issues. And to do this, we asked retired Deputy Chief Justice Motsoenete to hold a Commission of Inquiry to guide us all. Justice Motsoenete was given a very wide set of questions in a very short time frame. The Commission will remain ever grateful to him for the manner in which he responded to our call and the guidance that his report provided, not just to us, but to our country as a whole. In particular, the process and the subsequent engagement of the Constitutional Court, we believe, has elaborated issues that will provide us for a long time to come with a much clearer view of what freeness and fairness of elections needs to take into account, and also gave sufficient recognition to the important role that political parties and civil society in general should play and must play in mobilizing for the participation in elections. The Commission accepted the report of inquiry from Justice Motsoenete and on that basis approached the Constitutional Court for a decision to hold the election February 2022. Court declined. And in addition to declining this application, the Constitutional Court decided to reopen voter registration, thereby rendering the election timetable for October no longer applicable, resulting in a new timetable needing to be put in place. It was a timetable of only 42 days, and it enabled us to hold the election directed on the 1st of November. We held a registration weekend and election in 223 municipalities in the shortest period in the history of South Africa. The ability to achieve free and fair elections under these conditions within such a shortened timetable reflects well on the general state of readiness within the Commission and the dedication of staff at the Commission. We wish to pay tribute to the Chief Electoral Officer and his entire team for the work that they did, for the dedication that they showed, and for the consistency of all of their performance. We also wish to thank 12 million voters who cast their votes at 23,148 voting stations. Another major highlight for us that not only were the 221 GE elections historic for the purposes of the very pressurized situation that they put our entire country under, but they were also the most innovative. The investment that South Africa has made in the voter management devices has already paid off handsomely, and we believe that it will do a lot more going forward. Mr. Shibri will outline much more about the key innovations that were used in these elections and this issue in general. we had a major challenge emerging out of the LGE 2021. That was in particular low voter turnout. This is something that the Commission has been looking at its own position and role that it must play as part of the national effort. It hopes that all other players, including political parties and other members of civil society and government in general, will look so that we can grow and deepen our democracy by enabling a much more significant component of our population, all of those who are eligible to register and to exercise their hard-won rights to vote. As a commission, we wish to express our gratitude also to a number of ministers and departments that played a really significant role in enabling us to have these elections in the manner in which they were conducted. In particular, the department and the Minister of Cooperative Governance, the Traditional Affairs, of Home Affairs, of Police, of Finance, of Basic Education, and their departments and their teams. Time and time again, we are reminded of how far we have come as a country, of how our relatively young electoral democracy continues to grow, challenges notwithstanding. The successful free and fair elections that were held on the 1st of November 2021 were one such occasion. I'd like now to hand over, with your permission, Chairperson, to our Deputy CEO, Mr. Shikuri, for the detailed input from the administration. If I may, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner Love, Deputy CEO Shikuri. Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee, members of the Commission, colleagues. The presentation, the presentation outline deals with a number of things. It demonstrates that a number of factors must coalesce for a proper election to be held. I will not repeat the things that Commissioner Love has traversed, and this includes the current slide on inquiry to free and fair election. I will skip this one and deal with my presentation from this slide. And again, here, the Vice Chair has dealt with the issue. I just want to underscore the following, and that is, when the court set aside the proclamation by the minister, it reopened the voters' roll. The commission had an option to either organize a general voter registration weekend or to undertake continuous registration at its offices. The commission took the difficult choice of organizing a general voter registration within 10 days. They did this in order to vindicate the constitutional promise that ours is a common voter's role and that franchise is universal. I say this to underscore the following. If you open 23,000 voting stations, you equalize equity of opportunity for all persons who want to enroll on the voter's roll. Because if the commission had not done that, it would have meant that only persons who could access a network of voting of offices or those persons who could register themselves using online mechanisms would have been able to register as voters for the election. And what would that have done? It would have offended the promise of a common voter's roll. It would have made a franchise, a qualified franchise, and therefore not universal. So that choice is very important to understand that the commission did that not because it had the time, but because it thought that it needed to vindicate the constitutional promise, especially found in the founding provisions of the constitution. The other thing worth mentioning, that when the commission subsequently adopted a revised timetable following the judgment of the court, it also opened for a limited period candidate nomination. Why was that necessary? It was necessary because the court had ordered that the voters' roll must be unsealed. In other words, you had persons who were not registered, who were now registered with the new timetable. And those persons, if candidate nomination was not reopened, all that it meant was that those persons are good to register as voting holder, but they can't enjoy the totality of the rights in this in Section 19 of the Constitution to vote in free and fair election and to stand for election if they so desire. And in these circumstances, there were a number of persons who registered for the first time on the weekend of the 18th and the 19th who submitted and stood as candidate as first time voters. Without the reopening of that process, those young South Africans would not have been able to stand for political office, even though they were qualified to do so. The vice chairperson has dealt with the shortened timetable and the implications that it had. I won't deal with this in detail, except to say the following. That following the order of the court, we had 42 days to run an election. And that upset a number of activities that must happen in a sequential order. The scheme of the timetable is sequenced in that you first have a voter registration period, you have a period of objections to the voter's roll, you have a period within which the commission must consider those objections and make a decision, you have a period of certification of the voter's roll, you have a period for applications of special vote. But because we did not have the luxury of time, we almost had to do some of those activities in tandem, and those created difficulties in the administration of election. Additionally, you cannot start printing the ballot papers until such time that we have concluded candidate nomination. The 42-day timetable, these elections were only possible in 42 days because, one, the commission had not ceased with its preparation when it launched its application to court. But more importantly, it's because the commission was able to preserve some of the activities that it had undertaken in terms of the first proclamation of the 4th of August by the minister. So some of the activities that happened in terms of the timetable were preserved and carried over into the new timetable. If that was not done, there was no way that would have had an election on the 1st of November, even after the court had ordered us to do so. We now move to key highlights or key statistics of the elections, and this summarizes a number of issues related to this election. First one to be made is that we had 56.2 million South Africans who were registered and thus eligible to contest or vote in this election. Well-entrenched phenomenon, there have been more females on the voters' roll than males. It's well-entrenched. So 55% of the registered population are females, only 45% are male. For this election, the geography of the contest had not changed, that the same municipal boundaries that were used in 2016 were again in use for this election. We still had 8 metro municipalities, 105 local municipalities, and 44 district municipalities. We had a slight increase in the number of voting stations to 23,148,000. And we had 323 unique political parties that had met the requirements to stand and to submit candidates. And out of those 323 political parties, we had 95,427 candidates, which is a record. So in all, 99,000 persons wanted to be candidates. After the close of candidate nomination, we confirmed 95,427 the person who has met the requirements to contest, and therefore their names would have been on the permutations of ballot papers in use for this election. So this is in broad terms the key statistics of this election. And another record relates to number of approved special vote. By special vote, we mean votes for those persons who are unable to come to a voting station on voting day, or who know that they would have been, they would travel outside of their voting district and therefore vote their voting station ahead of voting day. In all, Commission approved 1,110,000 special votes, which represented 4% of the total registered voter. The next slide, the message that we want to communicate with this slide is that we all know that consistent with the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, we are increasingly a young population. However, there is an obstinance in the underrepresentation of young persons as voters on the voters' roll. Persons who are younger than 30 represent just over 17% of total persons registered on the voters' roll. This must concern all of us. We must spare no effort in inverting the underrepresentation of young persons, and those will be persons between the ages of 18 and 29 years old, because they constitute an increasing bulge in the population of the country. Next slide just sets out the voters' roll by province. I will skip it. This slide compares the number of registered voters against the estimated voting age population. In other words, we take the people that are physically registered as voters and we compare that information against data we receive from Stats SA. So Stats SA estimates that there are about 36.5 million South Africans who are 18 years and who are age eligible. And out of those 38 million estimated South Africans who are eligible, we have 26.2 million registered as voters. That gives us voter registration of 67.9%. As you'll observe from this slide, the rate of registration is more pronounced in more rural provinces. So the challenge for all of us is to narrow the gap between those South Africans that are eligible to register for voters who are not registered. They are in number, almost the same number of people who voted in this election. So as Democrats, we should be concerned with understanding why a sizable chunk, 10 million of our countrymen and countrywomen are not on the roll. Why do they feel that they can't, they have no role to play in influencing affairs of their communities and country? The next slide we just submit for the information of members just demonstrates the increase in number of wards in successive elections. This slide indicates what it is that we do after receiving the wards from the MDB. After the MDB demarcates wards, it submits the new wards to the IEC. On our part, we relook at all our voting districts to make sure that we change their boundaries to accord to the new ward boundaries. And in some cases, there is a need to re-register persons because while they were in ward 4, after the demarcation exercise by the MDB, their ward has been changed and now they fall in a different ward. So on our part, we must re-register those persons to make sure that we account for them in the correct ward in which they have been re-demarcated. The message we're communicating here is that over time, voters develop affinity with points of representation. And there are an increasing number of persons who, while they know that their ward boundaries have changed, simply refuse to be re-registered in the now correct voting stations. And when these persons are moved by the chief electoral officer, because the law puts an obligation on the chief electoral officer to change the registration details of voters who have been impacted by the ward demarcation. And when these people are moved, they still go to the old voting station and demand to vote there, knowingly that their ward of representation has changed. And then stories begin to be woven that people have been moved from the voters' roll unbeknown to them, or that they have voted in certain voting districts. They have now been removed from the voting expecting from the voters on when that is not the case. This slide talks to the output of the initiatives put in the Commission on the 19th of September 2021 when it organized a nationwide voter registration weekend, opening all 23 government voting stations. During that weekend, in those 2 days, the Commission interacted with no fewer than 1.7 million South Africans, the majority of whom were persons who came to stations to re-register because their voting district boundaries changed. 595,000 of those diligent South Africans who had come to re-examine their registration status and to confirm that they are still correctly registered. And 433,000 were persons who were registering for the first time as voters. So if the Commission had not organized at short notice a voter registration weekend in September, these 433,000 persons may not have had an opportunity to enroll on the voters' roll as voters. And for the first time out of the 433,000, the bulk of these were young persons who are under the age of 29 years old. This slide just gives us a summary of the voters' roll and voter density and municipality across the country. The light green color indicates municipalities low densities, where the registration between 1 and 10,000. The darker the color indicates areas of high densities, and these will coincide with your metropolitan areas and secondary cities in the country. So this gives you the geography of the vote spread across the country on a represented by way of a map. This slide talks about those who contested elections and the resultant ballot papers. The day of election, we had 508 registered voters. In other words, 508 registered voters were qualified to submit votes. Of that 508, only 323 parties met the requirements that submitted candidates. And out of the 323,000 parties that contested the elections, only 167 parties met the threshold for representation and got a seat in any of the municipalities across the country. Added to that were 1,700 independent candidates. This slide just demonstrates the rate of increase in candidates across all elections. You see that in 2011, we had 53,000 candidates total. This number has almost doubled in 2021 in a matter of 10 years to 95,440 candidates. The importance of this slide is that when you listen to the noises after the announcement of the context will always be important. To say, if 95,000 persons were contesting a finite number of seats, 10,400 seats, what that means is that the voices of the 85,000 candidates who did not get a seat will always drown the voices of the 10,400 voters who were successful. So that's why the noises are amplified after election, that people saying the elections were not free and fair because the majority of candidates, of contestants, did not receive a seat. This next slide just shows in a graphic representation the ballot in use for metros is 2, and for the local government, for local councils, we use 3 ballots, 1 for the ward, 1 for proportional for the municipality, and the other for the election of the 60%, or the other is for the 40% election locals to the district. This next slide, I'll pause on it for a few seconds because this must concern all of us as Democrats. This slide summarizes the rate of participation. participation by the 26 million voters were eligible. And we know now that only 12 million voted in this election, and that translates into a participation rate of 46%. And this slide also indicates that of the 12 million people who voted, we were able to harvest using our new technology of BMDs data from 11 million people. We have their data. We can tell at what time they voted and whether they received ballots, they were issued ballots. And we can also tell that of those persons, none attempted to present at another voting station to attempt to double vote. The turnout is summarized at the bottom in those bars at the bottom of the slide. And again, there is higher rate of participation in more rural provinces as opposed to the more urbanized provinces. This slide speaks to the input I made earlier on about us being an increasingly young population, and that the future of democracy rests among young persons. What this slide shows us is that while young persons are an artificial minority on the voters' roll, it cannot be said that they do not participate because there is apathy on their part. Because successive elections and successive research output confirms that once registered, young voters are more likely to vote than any age cohort. On this slide, you'll see that the persons who were 18 and 19 on the voting day, while they are minority of 1% of the voters, 71% of them went out and voted on voting day, which is higher than any age cohort, which means for all of us, we should continue to expand resources in this age band to increase the opportunities for these young persons to register, because once they are registered, they are more likely to participate than any age cohort. This slide just states the obvious that there were more female voters who turned out to vote. Not only are they the majority on the voters' roll, but they also represent the majority of participants in elections. Voter turnout by females was 58% when it was 42% for males. This slide should interest those who run party campaigns. And it came out as a surprise to us also in the Electoral Commission, because it acts well-entrenched friends that come 11 o'clock on election day in the morning, the election is either lost or won, because the majority of voters would have voted by 11 o'clock. If you look at the after the relates to rate of participation in 2019 national election, which shows that by between 7 and 9 o'clock in the morning, at the opening of voting, the majority of South Africans voted at that time. And from then onwards, from about 9 o'clock, the rate of participation is down and plateaus until station closes. So there's a rush in the morning, and about 11 o'clock, that rush peaks down to a streaming, almost equal flow, which is on a decline trajectory throughout the day. However, graph on the bottom shows for something new for 2021, that while between the bulk of the people voted between 7 and 9, there was not as much a bulge as in previous elections, because the rate of participation remained almost constant throughout the day until the voting stations closed at 7 in the morning. I wish to spend just a minute on this slide, Chair, to reiterate the obvious. One is that once we close, stations close after the vote, counting commences at all stations in the presence of party agents and observers where they are found, and that under no circumstances are ballots transported and counted from a voting station to another locality. Again, that result slips are completed in the presence of party agents and observers. And party agents can affix their signatures on those result slips. They can also take images of those result slips. Why do we do that? To obviate accusations that results that left the stations are not the results that have been captured on the result system. We also, in keeping with the tradition, retained 10 result operation centers, one each for the 9 provinces and one for national office. And also we had a capturing facility at all of our municipalities where the results were captured. And in all of those localities, political parties had access into the results collation process. Additionally, before the elections, we undertake an audit of our result system, the system that we use to process our results, to tabulate seats, to allocate seats, and those type of things. But more importantly is that once we've done our own audit, we invite political parties to say, bring your experts to come and also audit the system so that you can have level of comfort that the system does that which is intended to do. Again, ahead of this election, we also did that. Parties that were willing brought their experts, and they also shared their findings with us. On top of that, on election day, we appoint independent auditors whose job is to ensure that the results that we received from the station are captured correctly and scanned into the result system. And only once there's a match in those results do auditors press their code that is only known to them to make the results available to all of us. We receive the result slips or images of the result slip at the same time as political parties on the desk that we have at the result operation center. So the commission does not have sight of the report of the results from station ahead of any other stakeholders. So at the same time, as the results become available, they are available to us and they are available to political parties and candidates. This is important because parties then, because they do parallel tallying, they can look at what they've received from their party agents at the station and compare those against the results as captured on the result system to certify themselves that the results have been captured as they were cast at the voting station. So this speaks to the integrity and openness of the election process. We move now to the campaign that underpinned our messaging. Ahead of an election, the Commission conducts market perception survey, and the result of those surveys will inform the tone and nature of the communication and advertising strategy for the elections. And for this election, the underlying message from the Commission was that work begins when we come together in our communities, and the possibility of what could happen if we all made our voices heard in every election. And therefore, our tagline for this slogan for this election was "Every voice together." To say our voice can aggregate to make a change, and each one of us has a role to play in affairs of our communities, of our streets, of our towns, of our cities, and of our provinces. This slide begins to show some of the work that we did to prepare the environment for the elections. In spite of COVID, and given the well-received messages against gatherings, we were still able to have some form of face-to-face interaction in schools by way of municipal outreach coordinators across 9 provinces. But out of necessity, we needed to demonstrate resilience and change to a changed reality that face-to-face interactions were not desirable in the context of COVID-19, and in fact, they were discouraged by the regulations intended to curb the spread of the virus. And for that reason, it followed then that the Commission migrated a lot of its messaging and communication to digital platforms, including social media. And the slides, this slide and the following slide, will show to members the footprint and presence of the Commission on the new on social media and on digital platforms. We also have a partnership with SABC Education that allows us to fly educational content across SABC TV platforms as well as across the traditional radio stations. Even with COVID, we still persisted with face-to-face interaction with some of the key stakeholders, be they the agricultural sector, the trade unions, and business community, as well as faith-based organizations, so that we could call out the code even in a context of COVID. Let's skip this. I shall skip this as well. This slide speaks to the human capacity that we had for the election. In the context of COVID, and because the third wave coincided with a heightened activity of training, the Commission was forced to move some of its contact training to more remote platforms. And for this reason, for this, we introduced for the first time an e-recruitment system, which assisted us to recruit a large scale of electoral staff, as well as an ability to train using online platforms for appropriate content. This did not replace the traditional methods because we accept that social milieu in the country are not the same. So it was a hybrid system of both online recruitment as well as physical recruitment. This bar on the right gives you the breakdown of persons that we used as electoral staff. The people who were unemployed were 167,000 of people that we used as electoral staff, which means there was a significant decrease in the number of persons that were employed. And by so doing, we contribute to making opportunities available to those persons who would otherwise not have had opportunities. There is always criticism that the Electoral Commission fares just to electoral staff far and above the sectors of society. And you'll notice here that people who are teachers only represent 4% of the total people who work as electoral staff. And there is a rationale to this. The majority of our voting stations are schools. So in order to facilitate access to those schools and to give the principal and management of the school peace of mind that the facilities of the schools will be well looked after, it makes sense that you must have someone who is from that school among your staff for purposes of peace and access, safe storage of resources, and also for access to other facilities and amenities that the school provides. The age card gives you the breakdown by age of people that we use as electoral staff. The message we want to leave with political parties here is that while there is a need for the Commission to respond to difficulties in the country as it relates to youth unemployment and those type of things, we must also balance those against the rigors and the maturity required to manage a voting station. Where we have moved with speed to replace people who are employed and replace them with persons who are unemployed in the role of managing the station, there is indication that showed in the quality of management at that station. Because if a person has no supervisory skills, they will not supervise the staff at the voting station, but they can also not withstand the pressure that party agents place on staff at voting station. While we are open to contributing to youth unemployment, employment and also those other country imperatives. We must balance this against the requirement for the sufficiently matured person with a history or a background in administration or supervision, so that we strike a good balance of proper management of those stations while we contribute to all other country imperatives. This slide summarizes the training method. I won't go into it. Members of the committee will have the information at their leisure. The next slide, as I move towards conclusion, Chair, speaks to the key innovations ahead the 2021 municipal elections. We introduced the VMD, and this was dealt with by Commissioner Love. And let me just spend a minute to deal with the difficulties that we experienced with the rollout of the VMD. The VMD was first put out on tender 4 years back. Two tenders failed because in the first tender, the yield was that we could not as an institute afford to purchase those things. So we cancelled that tender with the approval of National Treasury. The second tender failed on technical grounds. And again, Treasury said it is not salvageable. We must cancel and run a new tender, which means then the lead time of procuring these devices was eaten out by the two failed tender crews. The third tender was run in the context of COVID and disrupted global logistics. And we received delivery only in about mid-2021, a few weeks before the registration began. What that meant is that we did not have sufficient time to test the devices in field. All that we could do was to simulate how the devices will operate, and we built the infrastructure to support those devices. We tested them for the first time in real life on the registration weekend, and we know that there were challenges on the first day. Which challenges we were able to isolate and improve, as demonstrated by an improved performance of the VMDs on voting day. There is no issue with the VMD. They do that which they expect to do. The issue with it was the environment. Was the VMD a good purchase? Indeed, it is a good purchase. It is a fit for purpose tool for our purposes, because it helps us to register voters. And in the context of a shortened timetable, we had voter registration on 18 and 19 of September, and because of the VMD, we were able to produce a voter's roll on Monday following the registration, which was a few hours after voter registration. Hitherto, that has never been a possibility because we had manual processes that were manual driven and manually laid. The VMG, as I indicated in previous slides, recorded 11 million of the 12 million people who voted and updated their details in real time. To do what? To enable us to know who has voted at what time and at what station, so that if that person attempts to have their ID scanned again at another station or even at that station, the VMG would have updated that database and it would indicate that that person has already voted in the election. We use the VMD to track ballots at any given point to tell the rate of consumption of ballot paper passed at the voting center. Moving key innovations again, we've revamped our public websites. We developed a public reporting app for disinformation on social media, and this is key because in the context of election, there are those, instead of campaigning positively, resort to negative campaigning. So this app allows us to track misinformation and disinformation, and it enables us to work with the platforms to ask for takedown of content if it is established that that content is disinformation intended to impact the elections. I've already spoken about the introductions in training of staff. Point six, we have introduced an online candidate nomination. This helped us. We have also introduced an online voter registration system for the first time, and that system recorded just under 600 thousand voters. Moving to the challenges of 2021. Is that we know now that we had a truncated time frame for election delivery in 42 days. The only thing that the Commission wishes to say here is that this can never, under any circumstances, be repeated without imperiling the democratic project. Because an election in 42 days is not doable. Because the law requires you to do certain things in a sequential manner before you can have a free and fair election. The recent trend of elections becoming highly contested, with increased intra and inter-party rivalries that play out in the electoral pool. So it's unheard of for one party to submit three lists of candidates, and it's difficult for the Commission to discern which of those lists represent the legitimate candidates for those elections. Worryingly, is that in other parts of the country, there's now a phenomenon on the increase of candidate or councillor killings. That can't go on without it communicating to the mind of the voters that parties are only concerned about themselves. In other words, they are inward looking and they are not there to ameliorate the circumstances that the general public finds themselves in. The cutthroat nature of contestation increases the risk of contestants not accepting the results and not resorting to established electoral justice mechanism. What we want to say there is that for this election, we had a high increase in the number of objections that were material to the outcome of election. That in and of itself is not a negative thing, because it shows that people have trust in the judicial ways of resolving disputes. The worry is if people now resort to other mechanisms and not the proper processes like the electoral court and objection process to raise their issues. There's an increase in instances of digital disinformation and outright disinformation, which is intended to affect how the voters cast their ballots. Community protest, we all know, you won't go into the details. The last point on this slide is issues around the continued decline in the rate of participation in elections. We have dipped beyond 50% participation in this election, and in 2016 we had about 57-58% rate of participation. This must worry all of us because it speaks to the credibility and the legitimacy of the outcome. We accept that COVID may have played a part, because in research undertaken in July, already a significant number of people had indicated that they will not be going out to vote owing to the COVID pandemic. But for political parties, this needs to be said. This election also coincided with sustained and unsubstantiated attacks on personalities or the Electoral Commission. And the position of the Commission has always been that where a party or candidate thinks that someone in the Commission or any of the commissioners acted in a manner unbecoming of the position that they hold, there are avenues to deal with that, including the Electoral Court. For parties to go on an onslaught, on a media, sustained media campaign to besmirch the good standing of the Commission and expect that their supporters will on voting day trust the very same Commission that has been assailed over a period of time, it's not sustainable, because people, if they don't trust the institution that runs elections, will stay away. If you communicate that the Electoral Commission cannot be trusted because it is partisan and you do not sustain that thing, how do you expect your voters to go out on voting day to vote in an election administered by a institution that cannot be trusted? In conclusion, while contesting parties and the IEC may have perceptions and views on how the electoral event unfolded. The views of the voters themselves must always be accorded primacy. In this regard, and consistent with previous elections, the Human Science Research Council tested the perceptions of voters who had just voted on voting day on 1 November, and they interviewed a representative sample of voters to test their perceptions on a number of things. And here are some of those results. And the perception of voters must be juxtaposed against the views of the Electoral Commission and the views of contestants and political parties. 92% of voters who had just voted said their perception is that the elections were free and fair. 97% said they are satisfied that their vote was cast in secret and it will be kept a secret. And on average, the majority of voters say that they stood in queues for less than 16 minutes to vote, which speaks to a sense of experience that the voters had at the voting station. With those, Chair, thank you very much. That concludes the submission of the election. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy CEO Shibori, for presenting the election report on local government 2021 on behalf of the IEC. And thank Commissioner Love for your intro on the observation as a result of the work that was undertaken by the IEC. I'm going to invite members to interact with the reports, and we'll then have a session of responses again or comments by the Deputy CEO and the team and the Commissioner Love and all commissioners. Commissioner Love will assist on the issue areas on commissioners if they want to respond or contribute to their reports, which you have just presented here with the Deputy CEO. Thanks very much. We'll interact with the report. I'm going to invite the Honorable Pillay, Honorable Ross, Honorable Tito, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Ramon Obeng, Honorable Lizelle, and Honorable Park. In that order, Honorable Pillay.
Sure, sorry, I'd lost you for a minute there, so I'm not sure who was first. But thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me first thank the IEC for their presentation. I think I must start off by applauding and congratulating the IEC for having run a free and fair election in spite of the various challenges that they have faced. I think it's important for us as a committee to place on record that this was the first time that they had to be under such extreme circumstances to be able to pull off an election. And yet, they have done that. And so with the new normal, there may have been various challenges. But again, it's important to note and also to just endorse the credibility of the IEC. I think I've said this before and I'll say it again, that if any individual or any political party finds that they have a reason to question the IEC, or they may have any perceived conceptions or allegations, then that must follow due course and due process. And until we do not receive any such reports or any such complaints lodged in the right way, I am of the firm view that this is an independent electoral commission and that the elections are being fair. Having said that, Chair, I think we must also appreciate some of the mechanisms and approaches that the IEC took. In particular, I want to mention one, the issue of, well, not the issue, but the process of where one gets marked on your thumb previously with a marker. And in this instance, they had a single sort of bud that looked like an earbud that was able to mark on each person, again, taking into precaution regulations around COVID. And I think that must be commended, because that's something that really, for me, when I got in, stood out to say, I mean, look at this. We are able to provide this kind of thing to avoid transmission of COVID. But having said that, Chair, there's just a few things that I want to raise. And I think the first one is around the low voter turnout. And I have to agree that to a large extent, we might see that this contributes to one, COVID, in that many people were still uncomfortable about having to stand in queues or having to go into a voting station based on the fact that they were at risk, and especially that our country was going through one of one of the most dangerous waves at the time. But just to mention that I'm concerned about special votes, in that there were many persons who had registered for special votes, however, they were not visited, and it's concerning because they took the time to register or apply for a special vote, but was not afforded the opportunity, and it made it difficult for those people who were actually bedridden or those who definitely had a physical infirmity and they were not able to go to a voting station. Coupled with COVID, I mean, that becomes a challenge. So having not been able to cast their vote, even while they took the time to register for a special vote and received confirmation of that special vote, I think, for me, is concerning. Then there was the challenge of voter registration versus the voters not being able to vote. And I think that was something that came up even on the day of the election, and even as the chair and the committee were trying to intervene, IEC tried to even intervene. But we did find many, many political parties raising concerns that there were voters who had registered at the voter registration weekend. However, they did not find themselves on the voters' roll. In some instances, presiding officers were even able to confirm, indeed, this person registered, but doesn't appear there and was not able to vote. And I think that, in terms of a credible outcome, in terms of a democratic process, it does give us some kind of challenge, because people have taken the time again to register, but were not able to vote. And then there was the challenge of incorrect ballots, Chairperson, where in some voting districts, it was the actual incorrect ballot when it came to candidates, but that was still counted as being part of being allowed to be counted. And the last one is around voting districts and how in the same household, you have people who belong to one VD and others belong to another VD. And I think that going forward, we must be able to then correct these things and be able to move forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable, for your contribution. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the presenters from the IEC. Chair, I'll focus on the VMD. Because in my experience, this caused the greatest havoc and robbed South Africans of their right to register and vote on this election day. I had one lady that was absolutely distraught, and she said that she'd voted in every single election since 1994, and she was devastated that she now couldn't vote because she had registered to change her where she lives with the VMD, and on the day she was shocked to find that it hadn't reflected. Now, I'm amazed that the IEC doesn't even list it as one of their challenges and detail the failures and frustrations that were experienced with these systems in the run-up to the local government elections. And I'm also disturbed to hear, Chairperson, that the IEC is telling us that they tested it on registration day, that they first tested it then. Because we as a committee, we specifically asked whether these devices had been tested and whether the field staff had been trained, all of them, and whether there was a backup system in place. And we received assurances from the IEC that this was the case in this committee, Chairperson. Another concerning thing, Chairperson, is that it was mentioned that with the VMDs, that you can see when a person voted and at what time. So my question in this regard is why would you want to see that? And how is this information that is collected with these VMDs, how is it de-identified, and how is it managed and protected in terms of the POPI Act, Protection of Personal Information Act? So, Chairperson, I think, you know, if we look at the criteria of the IEC and what they need to achieve, when they need to manage registration and the election in such a way that every person that's entitled to be registered and wishes to do so is enabled by the IEC and its systems to do so, and they should ultimately be able to cast their vote. And so, you know, the concern here is that, you know, the IEC is able to tell us a lot about the number of persons that are registered, but it doesn't seem to be able to tell us or make an accurate assessment of the number of persons who wanted to register. So how many wanted to register online during the registration weekend, but were failed by the systems? And I don't know if the IEC can contradict me on this, but it seems to me that there's no statistic on this whatsoever. And how many persons were turned away, because it's a key constitutional requirement of the IEC to ensure that somebody who wants to register can do so. And they're being robbed of their right to vote if it doesn't happen. Chairperson, you know, another thing is there's no assessment is made of how the other slow performance and the number of VMDs that were issued impact on the time it took to process voters during the local government election. And what this caused on the day, Chairperson, is basically slow queues, so especially in voting areas of high voter concentration. And, you know, we saw reports of persons wanting to leave these queues as a result of the failures on the system. And so if the ability of people who want to, you know, who qualify, do register and vote as an element of free and fair elections, for which the IEC is solely responsible, then it's worrying that, you know, if we don't know these KPIs and they were not handled, it remains problematic, you know, if the IEC is not able to report on these at all. In addition to this, Chairperson, I mean, it's really worrying too that no action plan is presented to address these weaknesses of these VMDs and what happened. So, Chair, I believe it will be very helpful to this committee if we can resolve that the IEC must present a full action plan on how it's going to prevent a repeat of all these issues with the VMDs in the 2024 election. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Woz, for your contributions. Thank you very much, Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson. A greeting to everyone who is present. Chair, my concern also is on the devices that were not working during the registration weekend. And I think that last year, before the actual elections, Honorable Premier suggested to the committee that we must go, as a committee, we must go and test the devices, but the IEC, I don't know why they didn't give us that preference, that as a committee of Home Affairs, we must go and test the devices and not them testing them on the day of the registrations. I said that one was our concern all over. And can the IEC also give us the stats of new registrations on all of them, because of I did not see on the slide. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tito. Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation and presented by the IEC, and also acknowledge the role played by the Commission during the 2021 local government election. Even though it was very tight as usual, but they tried their level best in making sure that the election are held and they are free and fair. We really appreciate it. The person, I just want to check with the commission that as we have experienced a lot enough during the 2021 local government election, maybe the commission can be able to elaborate the challenges concerning this low turnout.
and what are the future strategies that need to be done in making sure that we restore the confidence from voters in the future election. My second question, Chairperson, I just want to check with the Commission that if the 3 days election petition, what is election, objection, and petition, and everything concerning the voters role, maybe the IEC can also review the issue of 3 days to give the community enough time, and also the Commission have also enough time to look into the issue of objections and the inspection of the business. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Mulego for your contributions. Honorable Kanyele?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings once again to the colleagues and representatives from IEC. Chairperson, I also want to acknowledge that the IEC did run the elections under challenging circumstances, and on a number of occasions we did come before the portfolio committee and commend them on the by-elections that were well handled. But one has a different view in terms of how the 2021 elections were handled, because as some of the colleagues have already mentioned, the issue of the VMD. When IEC was making the presentation, they started mentioning the challenges that they were faced with when they were procuring the VMD, but that is not reflected anywhere in the report. And we did emphasize on the portfolio committee that we want these VMDs to be tested on us before they were going to utilize on the ground on a number of occasions. And IEC did confirm that was going to happen, but it didn't happen up until the last day of election. And secondly, the issue of people that came to register during the registration weekend and found that the IEC system was offline, their details were captured manually. I was in a number of VGs in Ligwa, and there was a huge number of people that were turned away because they were not appearing on the voters' roll, and all of them, they confirmed that they have voted. And that is not reflected in this report. What I would like to know from the IEC is what happened to those registrations, because people came to the VGs and indicated that they have registered, but they were not appearing. Another thing that I have picked up during the presentation from the IEC, they have mentioned that people refused to be moved to new VGs. What I want to confirm is that some people were not moved only to a different VG, but they were moved to a different ward altogether. I have a section in my ward. I reside in Ward 6. Even when we were doing our door-to-door and leading to the voting day, when they came, they did not appear on the voters' roll. But because we had the online system, when we checked them, they were appearing in Ward 5, which was about 6 to 7 kilometers away from where they were supposed to vote. And some of them did not vote because of that. What we'd also like to know is that how did the IEC arrive at the decision of moving a resident from their own ward, the ward that they decide is, to go into a different ward and vote for a different ward councillor? I think that is what we'd also like to know. I'm also picking up IEC is emphasizing on the issue that they only had 42 days to run the election. The IEC know that they have a constitutional obligation to deliver elections at a specific specified period. And on a number of occasions, the IEC appeared before Parliament and confirmed that they were ready. And last night, while I was reading the report, I also went on the IEC's website. There's a number of statements that they have been issuing confirming that they have been ready. So the 42 days cannot really be an issue, just the same. IEC, on their report, they've also mentioned that they have reached schools, 1,383 schools, and they have interacted with the 75,360 learners. What I would like to know is that in each and every municipality where they went to interact with those learners, did they make arrangements or coordinations with the local IEC offices to ensure that those learners that showed interest, they are registered on that day so that they will not have to go again and register and only be ready to go and cast their vote on the day that they are expected to. The issue of broadcasting. It is indicated in the report that they have used various channels that I'm not going to go through in the interest of time. However, when it comes to DSTV channels, they just say, and they have went to some of the DSTV channels. What I would like to know is that which DSTV channels were they appearing on, and what criteria did they use to identify those DSTV channels. Then there was an issue also that I have picked up, the issue of call center training of staff that they were handled, they were trained to handle election-related queries. I would like to know that what kind of queries are those, because on the day when people were turned away in various cities, I myself took an initiative to call, especially some of the IEC executive members that I have their contact numbers, and none of them answered their phones, because once they've been under the impression that they will at least give guidance, because we all knew that the systems were offline. People were here wanting to exercise their right to vote, and that right was taken away from them. So we just want to know that what were other measures in place to ensure that issues that we experience on the ground, we are able to escalate them, and there's somebody that is actually available to be able to give us direction. I also picked up something, Chairperson, here about the survey. There's a survey by the IEC that shows that the community trust is actually increasing in the IEC. In 2014-2016, they were at 66%, and now they are at between 83% and 84%. I'm more curious in finding out from the IEC that why is their survey different from the one of Afrobarometer? Because Afrobarometer has done the same survey, and theirs shows a decline, and it is a very huge margin, because it indicates that in 2014-2016, the level of trust in the Electoral Commission was 69%, and it has now decreased to 36% in 2021. If we can just get clarity on that, I think we will very much appreciate. Lastly, there's another point that I have picked up on the litigation matters. It mentions that there were objections on Section 55, and there's a mention also on 6 cases that were finalized, and 2 were in the favor of the applicants. Though they did not go into details that who were the applicants, what I would like to know is that if the objection was about the counting process, when the Electoral Court makes a decision that favors the applicant, what do they do? Do they go back to those municipalities that raise the objection and recount and reallocate the seats, or they just let the matter go? Because obviously, when you get the court order, you will get it maybe in a year later after the elections have taken place. I think that is what I will like to know. Yes, Chairperson, I think for now I am covered. But yeah, my biggest concern were the people also that did not vote in the correct meetings that you're supposed to be in, especially a whole ward, and they were forced to go and vote in another ward, and some did not even go there because it was a very big distance, I think about 5 to 6 kilometers, and we do know that some of the members of the communities do not have cars. And this thing has actually affected all political parties. I'm not just speaking for my political party. When we're in politics, we're in the game of numbers. If there are people that do not vote, we all lose numbers. So I would like to know that how did we get there? And those registrations that were taken manually, where did they disappear to? And going forward, what is the IEC plan to deal with these matters? Because We don't want to encounter the same problem in 2024. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyele, for your contribution. Honorable Ramalobe.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, can I kindly ask not to show my face in terms of the video, if you permit?
No, you're allowed. We're all cycling on the network. Proceed, Honorable Ramalobe.
Good morning, colleagues, again. And welcome also the presentation from the IEC. Chair, I think Honorable Kilei and Honorable Kanyele would have touched on a number of issues or matters that I would want to raise with regard to IEC. I would also agree with Honorable Kanyele on the matter of the 42 days that IEC indicates that they had prior to the 76 days. I think also it's just a mere excuse because IEC knows that its main objective is to run elections. So therefore, you can't go out in media and appear in parliament and declare that you are ready for elections, wherein you come back later on and indicate that you are not. The issues of machines not working properly on elections day and so forth and so on, they really costed us votes because people were not patient enough to wait for systems to reboot or operate again immediately when you can't. They can't be scanned. They then left, and there were no guarantees of some of them coming back, which it was another issue that we had on election day. I'm not sure whether it's Honorable Kanyele or it's Honorable Pile that raised also the issue of people when they go to vote, they find that there are routine tests to other branches or they don't appear. How does the IEC manage to resolve this going forward? What permits to that? Chair, I would want to know, do the IEC know what percentage of voters that were affected by the speed voting change managed to either re-register or what? And if they did manage to re-register, how many have done? And those that did not manage to register, try to vote, do they have that percentage or the number? And what conflict resolution mechanism are used to address the inter and intra-party conflict before, during, and after elections that they might encounter? What methods do they use? But above all, Honorable Kadiza and Honorable Kadiza will have touched on the number of issues that I wanted to raise on. Oh, last check is the issue of staff complement. Why is it that I see every time we have elections, they change the staff complement? And you get this from people that would have applied possibly in the 2016 elections and they would reapply for the 2021 elections and they get to be told either they don't get to be taken back or something, and then you ask why you didn't reapply. They would make an indication that they did, but they were not successful or whatever reason. And you find new majority would be new applicants that would be coming in to conduct elections. Aren't we properly training the people that are going to conduct elections? Because you find most challenges emanate from them, not understanding how I supposed to operate or how the voting on the day should continue or enforce. When party agents will raise issues pertaining to voting or clarity, they seem not to know. They would keep on calling the regional manager or seek clarity somewhere else, and that on its own stalls the process of voting. For instance, you find if a VD station opens at 7 o'clock in the morning, if it doesn't open at 7 o'clock in the morning, it opens at 8 o'clock. It means the hour that it did not used to open in the morning must be kept in the afternoon. That would reduce. So how are we dealing with those effects and in making sure that they do not happen in the coming election? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ramlobing, for your contribution. Co-chair, Honorable Zen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me just add my voice to all my colleagues that have thanked the IEC for their presentation. I do think that, yes, the IEC did have challenges. That it had a short period, even though there are differing views on whether that is material or not. But I still think we need to congratulate the IEC on a job well done. You were able to run an election in a short period of time, and it shows that the systems are working and robust. However, that being said, of course, there have been a number of challenges, and my colleagues have alluded to it. But I would still like to say that I'm quite baffled why the report doesn't focus in earnest on the issues of voters who were registered and could not vote. And I'm saying that, Chairperson, because it affected all of us, and I think it's one of the main issues why the IEC this election suffered some credibility and brand damage. And I think, you know, to have a presentation that is largely silent or is silent on this issue is quite baffling, because in our instance, for example, our president emeritus, his family has moved down from Johannesburg. They've gone on the registration ticket. They registered on the voting day. They were not appearing on the voter's roll. And so even on the day, I had calls from many young people who, for the very, very first time, had actually plucked up the courage, wanted to go and vote, stood in the queue, registered, only to find that they're not on the voter's roll. And then that, in fact, now discourages those young people who had made the effort and the arrangements to vote, because now they were less disappointed. And so I would have thought that this report would have, A, given us an indication as to what the IEC's findings were, in other words, how many people were affected by this, that they'd gone to register on voter registration weekend and did not appear, because it's very integral and material to whether to a free and fair election and whether the outcome reflected the wishes of the people. So I would have thought that this would have been reflected in this report. And then, yes, we shared the concerns about the VD machines. We had issues with regard to them not being able to read IDs, and it appears that there was no synergy between the information on this machine and the hard copy of voters' rolls. And so I would share the sentiments of Honourable Roux to suggest that the IEC should come back and give us a plan of action on how they would address all of these challenges that they face so that we don't repeat them in 2024. There were also issues with regard to some staff that needed more training, and I guess it's due to the time frames that you had at the IEC. But my question is, will you be able to invest more in training ahead of 2024, considering your budget cut? A lot is made of the fact that, of course, the issue of disinformation and the impact that has on the elections, and I guess it will be a greater threat going into 2024. So I think the Public Reporting Act is a very important tool, but nobody, I didn't see any information on this act being circulated or that it wasn't visible on social media. So I think I would like to make a suggestion that maybe in the next election or the lead up to the next election, whether the IEC can train political parties on this act so that we can obviously then also train our party agents and our rank and file. But this Public Information Act, or this app where you can report disinformation, must be very visible on the various social media platforms. Then, with regard to social media, there's a lot of focus on social media, and I've said before I see that I think we are doing well in this regard. But I wanted to inquire, I think the stats are saying that almost 96% of South Africans have got cell phones, but of course not everybody has got access to data or the internet. So I wanted to know whether the IEC has explored possibly doing short SMSs in the lead up to voting day to educate the public about the voting hours, where they need to go and vote. For example, it could say, yes, so you are registered to vote here. Remember, voting days on this and this day. But bring your ID, be part of exercising your vote. I've never received such messages from the IEC. However, I do get messages from other political parties. So I wanted to know whether this is something that they would consider. I did hear the Deputy CEO speak about the issue of youth unemployment and that we cannot really utilize young people because they do not have experience. But I do think that we should, in the lead up to 2024, considering that we've got a 70% youth unemployment, invest in training of the youth so that they can be part part of the staff that worked for the IEC in the elections. And then finally, Chairperson, I wanted to speak about the issue of the voter turnout. I understand that COVID might have played a role. I understand we can't lay the IEC or lay it at the door of the IEC if there's, you know, solely at their door, there's a low voter turnout because there is this trust deficit between the public and political parties. But I would like to know if the IEC, whether they've got data on voter percentage per age band. In other words, those who registered and those who actually voted per age band for the purposes of targeted outreach. Then we speak about the crisis of the low youth participation. But when we met with the IEC last time, they indicated that the schools program is not something new or the work that they're doing at universities are not new. So my question then is, do they find that these programs that they've rolled out are yielding results? And maybe also, what are some of the international best practice methods that have not been used as yet that we could possibly look at to promote and increase voter participation? And then finally, I find it very interesting that the Deputy CEO says that rural communities were more active in this election, and I find that interesting because these voters don't necessarily have got access to data or the internet, and they're not close to voting stations. So they might have to use their own money for transport in these disadvantaged communities. And yet, those in the urban areas like Gauteng, there's a very low voter turnout. So my question in the camp is that the IEC believe that moving registration and voting online, do you think that that will be a way of solving the low voter turnout in Gauteng and other urban areas? Thank you, Chair.
I'm asking myself, but I hope the IEC knows. But I'm asking them. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable Zell. Honorable Hossa. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me once again greet all the colleagues on the platform and congratulate the IEC for delivering the free and fair local government elections. Chair, I do not want to repeat on many of the issues that have already been mentioned by my colleagues. But a question arises as these questions are asked to say, does the IEC have a plan on resolving all these other issues in preparation of the upcoming elections? Because, Chair, I would want to make an example with what has just happened around the 4th of May, whereby in November, a person voted at a certain VD, and then 3 months down the line, a person is moved from their ward to another ward for voting. So the question might arise to say, after the completion of the process of the demarcation, how long does it take for information to get to the IEC and for the IEC to start transferring voters from one VD to the other and informing a person that is voting to say, you have been, or sending an SMS to say, you no longer in this VD, but in that VD. Of which a lot happened on the 4th of May when we had by-elections and the issue of transfer of voters from one VD to the other has very bad results, one can say, and it affected all parties that participated in those by-elections. But also, Chair, I want to check also with the IEC. After conducting elections, they had their post-mortem or they made an analysis of their performance in the elections. Did they see a need or a room for any improvement? If they've seen that, can they give us maybe a short analysis of where their strength was, their weaknesses was, or where they saw an opportunity of them improving on anything? I do not want to dwell or to repeat what my colleagues have already said, but in short, these are the issues that emanate from each and every election. These are not the new issues. And as they come each and every time after the election, it's like there's nothing that has been done. So my question would be that do you really make an analysis and try to improve on areas where the public at large, political parties and members of parliament as we see, are raising concerns over? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, for
contributions in, on the board. There are two issues which I want commissioners and the CEO to expand more. And I think we're taking observation on the challenges faced when we are procuring the devices. And I think we're giving more account on the interaction between yourself and the and treasurer in terms of this procurement process. And the issue which I think is emerging strongly is your confirmation of this device by the IEC and the minister then, Minister Mtswaledi. There was a strong confirmation on the readiness of this device. But I think you are highlighting that given that it has arrived late, it may have contributed to the testing of these devices throughout your system. But I think it is important that when the IEC give reports to the committee on certain areas where you confirm your readiness, and when you go into practice, we're able to collaborate your statement and which you are even saying to the public in terms of this. I'm giving this account because this experience, I had the same problem, Commissioner Love, on the queue. I mean, there were almost three or four people who were removed. They could not, when they arrived at the voting station, they said, no, you're not registered. And I know that they've been voting there for years in the West 21 in Bulugwa. Others, they've been registered far away from the registration point. And I think this point which the members are raising must be able to all of us give account so that we build from that weakness as we're moving towards the 2024 election. And you know that currently we're dealing with the electoral amendment bill that may come with many changes in terms of our legislation and also your regulations at the IEC. So we may need to have a system that strengthens the credibility of the IEC. And I'm not questioning that the IEC is lacking credibility because of this shortcoming, which all of us were being thoroughly briefed. I mean, the IEC has been improving its way post-1994, gradually improving its system. And I think we must, as a committee and yourself, highlight that challenge. It's correct for members to say, look, your presentation could have, given this challenge that we face, could have taken a strong posture to highlight the challenges in relation to what our community members have faced. The Deputy Minister of POCTA will also account to this experience where she was at the voting station, being called by members of society, having wanted to vote and could not vote others, they could not even participate in the voting process. And in terms of the what might have contributed, whether the will the IEC apportion some of the challenges which these devices that have been affected might have contributed to the deadline of participation of our members of the community to vote. But I can see that my observation that you highlight the issue of COVID, what impact might have contributed to this end. But overall, I think we take note of the report, Commissioner. We're going to request Commissioner Love and the Commissioner to start responding or commenting on the issue member rate, and then we'll invite the Deputy Commissioner, sorry, Deputy CEO, Shibori, to close up the responses, and Commissioner Love will also invite to make closing remarks on all the issues that they may have raised. Thank you. Commissioner Love?
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the members.
there are a number of questions, and what I'm going to ask in terms of how we respond to them is to give my two fellow commissioners who are online initial opportunity to give some responses, starting with Commissioner Moyepia, then Tamasuku. Then I'll allow the CEO to deal with questions that the three commissioners would then ask for further detail from the administrative team, things like the training and so on. But maybe let's start, Chairperson, with your permission, just to hand over to Commissioner Moetia, who will deal with a number of the questions pertaining to the timing of 42 days and its relevance and the voter management device and so on. Commissioner Moetia.
Thank you, Chairperson of the session, and honourable members, colleagues, and friends. I think we must thank honourable members for frankly raising concerns they may have or they have noted, and for us to consider those very carefully. I think there are many issues that have come out of this discussion. Many of them are issues that we have spoken about, and the context must be clarified. I want to talk about the issues that have been raised really in themes, rather than, you know, going point for point on the issues members have raised. Let's begin with the timing of elections. Members will recall that the Electoral Commission, and correctly so you say, the Electoral Commission knows when an election must be held. We have gone as far as developing an election timetable, having a proclamation for those elections, and the number of days that were going to be taken up in the preparation of those elections were obviously in that period. When the matter was reviewed later and we were required to reopen the voters' roll, members must look at the election timetable. It is not possible to then say we've had enough time, when in fact we've got to reopen processes that require that new persons must register, new objections must be heard, and new decisions must be taken by the Commission. And in that respect, we are not indeed denying that we knew. We are saying when a period of an election is reopened, the timetable is reopened, it is not possible to complete all of the work in the period as if nothing has happened. And essentially, that's where we were. The deputy CEO, the acting CEO has indicated that we were helped in this instance by the fact that we were prepared and we had a timetable. In part. In the event that it happens when we don't, it's just not possible to have an election. And I'd like to say to members, we are not denying that we knew. Members would know that we had a timetable and we had planned in that manner. But there were developments, and we acknowledge those developments, which were unique, which were precedent, but, you know, there was nothing that was like them in the past, and we had to deal with them. The second thing I'd like to deal with is the issue concerning the VMDs and what has happened. I think, unfortunately, the issue of simulation versus testing is important to clarify. When the Electoral Commission prepares for an election, it does a lot of work to simulate before it even goes into the field. The simulation happens extensively and involves political parties in our PLCs. We want to confirm that we have done with political parties represented in party liaison committees, and they have seen the DMDs and have had to deal with us on what range of issues we have simulated, what the simulation tells us, what we need to adjust if we needed to, and so on and so forth. And we have received quite a bit of input, even from political parties. What we say we did not have was the opportunity in real life to what we said was testing in real life to have a registration weekend where these things happen and staff members have had the opportunity to meet with voters. And that was not made easy by the fact that there were restrictions in relation to COVID. And we acknowledge and we take that to heart. We want to assure you that situation has in fact in part or in a great part been attended to. In what way do I say that? It's because since the election in November, we've had almost by-elections monthly, and in some months, two-thirds. And in those by-elections, the process has been refined. Members will be pleased to know that many of our experiences coming from elections, even with the debriefing we had with all of our electoral stakeholders, including political parties. And in that respect, one must say that an opportunity to debrief with members of the portfolio committee, I would welcome, and I think the commission will welcome, because the detail of some of the measures we had taken, even after an election, have come out, and we have dealt with those. And where there are residual actions we need to take, those residual actions are underway, and we will be happy to share with members. The third point I want to deal with is the fact that this electoral commission has what we call a dry run before an election is conducted. Even with the tight circumstances under which these elections have happened, we have had a dry run of these elections. And who does this dry run involve? It involves representatives of political parties. It involves observers. It involves our staff. And it involves everyone who, on election day, may have an active role in processing the administrative work in an election. We have run a dry run in this election with political parties, and I think members of the media were in part present because we did this at the National Results Center. A number of things came out, and we were clear we would address them. One of those that have come out was the fact that when we registered voters in the only registration weekend we make available in the time, was the fact that the DMD was said to allow a voter or a member of the electoral staff, typically a registration officer, to confirm the address of a voter on the screen by touching that address, you know, the area where that address is located. And I want to be frank and say part of the problem we had was the fact that in that process, because the system was more open, people have pointed to addresses other than where they live. And that has created the problems members have raised. On slide number 14 of the slides presented by the acting CEO, we indicate the number of new registrations, re-registrations in the same VD, and re-registrations, because people had moved. a total number of 1.7 million voters were reported. I want to very clearly point out that the challenge of misallocated voters that we had was limited to approximately 140,000. And of those, we individually indicated that we will pre-approve their registrations in their stations where we knew. And throughout the election period, we kept on updating or on the challenges and the progress we are making. What am I saying? I'm saying, yes, we have had those challenges. They are quantifiable. They were not in excess of 140,000. And therefore, their limitation is up to that number of 140,000. The last point I really want to raise in dealing with this is that when one looks at why it is important to embrace and improve on where we are and what we have, one of the big things we faced before this election was the fact that voters, or the allegation that voters often move from one station to the other and attempted to vote or vote for the second time. You will recall that in this election, that situation was one we never faced. And this is an area of improvement we need to build on. The last point I want to raise is the concern we all have about low voter turnout. We, on our part, as we've always done, we've always had researchers on election day out at representative voting stations to interview, to be in contact with the voters and to ask them of their experiences. And I want to confirm that our HSRC report, I'm not aware how the Afrobarometer have done their own, but the HSRC report is done on site on the day, and the results of that we make available to South Africa when or before we declare the results. That process is not impeached, as I understand. It is real, and it's really based on those stations where we have been. And for that reason, I want to urge members to look at the HSRC report. I'm not saying it's glowing in every respect, but it is the most reliable form of testing what performance we have undertaken as the Commission and what improvements we need to make. Chairperson, I'd like to pause there. I thought I should deal with these issues. There are a number of them. And I want to say through our Vice Chairperson that I think the request from the Portfolio Committee to possibly debrief this election is one that we should embrace. There is nothing to hide. There is nothing to, if we are to take our nation forward, these are matters we have to jointly overcome. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Commissioner Moretta. Dr. Masuku, could you come in and then I'll discuss some other matters if there are any. Dr. Masuku.
Thank you very much, to the honorable chairperson of the session and all honorable members that are on the platform. Allow me to say first two things. I am grateful especially for the generosity of the candid input from members of the Portfolio Committee. I find those contributions very, very helpful and very, very insightful. I think I must support what Commissioner Mirza is saying, that we may be better served by having also would like also to acknowledge the comment about the absence of a session that deals pointedly with the issues of concern that were raised. I think the report, I accept that the report could have been enriched with a section that we said, given the peculiarity of the elections in 2021. And I think perhaps something can be done to augment the report by dealing specifically with the issues, given the data that is available, pointing out where data is not yet available, and then moving from there. Having said that, I'm going to try and deal with some of the questions that that has specific. I am going to deal with the issue of voter turnout a bit later. Let me begin with what Commissioner has talked about. Why is there a discrepancy between the research that is commissioned by the Electoral Commission and that is commissioned by somebody else, like Afrobarometer? The answer lies in the differences in the sample itself. The HSRC, which is the research that is commissioned by the Electoral Commission, samples only people that have voted. Afrobarometer, in contrast, and all other surveys, they sample all South Africans. Whether they are eligible, whether they are eligible to vote, not eligible to vote, have voted, haven't voted. And so that difference in sample size changes. And I do confirm that people that have had the experience of voting, they tend to report a higher satisfaction level, and people that have not, they report higher satisfaction, but they also report higher trust. Whereas the bigger sample that involves all other categories of citizens in the country, they tend to report lower satisfaction and lower trust. And to admit that it is an area of concern, the issue of decreasing trust is correct, and there are explanations for it, but I will not get into those explanations at this point in time in the interest of time. And then going to answer the question on the staff complement. Why is it that the Electoral Commission changes staff complement? And the Honorable Ramon Lebe, I apologize, Honorable MC, I'm struggling with pronouncing your surname. Why do you change
Doctor, I can intervene there. Honorable Ramon Lebe.
Okay. I will practice on Honorable Chair at a different time. To say that the question there is about, one, there are some people that apply from election to election and don't get accepted. Why is that? That happens because, one, as for example, you change the criteria for getting people to serve as staff, some people don't make the cut. Others don't make the cut when it comes to, for example, doing the first module. The first module is one of the things that you do once this is in the recruitment process. Some people perform so badly in module one that they are then kicked out of the pool of people that is considered for staff complement. So it does happen. I want to answer very directly and say to you, it does happen that a person that has come before doesn't is not able to come a bit later. And then draw your attention to what the FGCO says, that we do have a push, we have in the past a push to try and open opportunities for persons that are not employed. That has had the desirable effect of opening employment as an opportunity, even though they are there for, to more people. But what it does is that sometimes you lose those people that have served in the system for longer periods. We do try to retain a fairly constant complement for the positions of a presiding officer and deputy presiding officer for the reasons that we're offered quite eloquently by the SEC CEO. But there you need a great management capability that you can demonstrate. And so that is what might affect the change. Specific cases that might be aberrations, I don't want to deny them. I don't think that it is okay to deny them. There may be aberrations in the system, and if it might help for you to raise them with us as individuals, I would like to have five of them so that you can see if you can understand what happened in your particular instance. And then I'm going to come to the issues of the app. Of the electoral commission to that there's this information that wasn't visible, and I'm going to ask to take that, I think, to the deputy CEO that is responsible for office, so that they can tell you what it is that happened there and what it is that we can do better. He will also deal with the issues of why we don't send a short SMS to educate a voter. Finally, Vice Chair and the Chairperson of the Session, I'd like to talk once again about voter turnout. The voter turnout, we have discussed in an earlier session with the portfolio committee. It is quite possible, honorable members, that voter turnout was affected by many of the things that you said, the atmosphere in the country, and all of those. It is also accurate to say that voters might have been turned away because of the breaches or the reporting of the breaches, and that affected voter turnout. So those effects also attribute to voter turnout. However, voter turnout also depends on the people's assessment of what is an offer. So when there are issues around what people believe is happening in the broader space, in the democracy and all of those things, and that affects their intention to participate in the electoral process. I would like, when we have this debriefing session, to speak more about what is happening in terms of researching voter turnout across the world, because I think that it would be very, very useful to see how we compare to other countries in terms of, one, how we experience voter turnout, and what is specific to us in South Africa. Certainly, when it comes to global practices of encouraging voter turnout, the first thing that we do is to increase trust in democracy itself, trust in institutions that support democracy, trust in representatives themselves, and trust in the election management body itself. So when there is, I want to say finally, that bad news travels faster than good news. So if there is a report that there's a glitch with a device called the VAVD that travels faster than any corrective measure that you can put in place. Because people tell themselves, oh, everything, the sky is falling, and I will not bother to come out. So it is a multifaceted problem, I think, that it is not going to be solved by one single answer. And I think that where we're going to help ourselves understand declining voter turnout. And there is wonderful research that is specific to us in South Africa, specific to the continent of Africa, and specific to the entire globe, that will help us understand the phenomenon a little bit better, and therefore respond much more pointedly to the issues that we face. But Chairperson, I'm going to stop today. If there are any issues that I've left out that you believe I should deal with, you will help me do so a bit later. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. Masuku. Yes, sorry. Sorry about that. Before handing over to the acting CEO, I thought that there were a couple of things that I should deal with. In particular, the proposal made by yourself, Chairperson, as well as the Honourable Member Ruth, and other Honourable Members, for us to be able to share with you and engage with you much more closely about the remediation measures that we are looking at in terms of both the voter's role and, in that regard, registration and the DMD device. I think that the other commissioners have, of course, pointed out that some of these remediation measures are already taking place in the course of the by-election, and indeed some of them took place even prior to the actual election event in November. So just the one example that Commissioner Moyetia gave, where because the voter management device was enabling people to use a pointer to identify where they lived. As we know, when you have a touchscreen device, I'm sure many of you have had this experience, when you have a touchscreen device that's giving you directions, if your touchscreen is not very, very highly accurately pointed on, you can land up, especially on a map, going to another area and another ward, as the Honourable Kangide indicated. And, of course, that is something that is undesirable and needed to be remedied. There are other issues that arose between the registration weekend and the elections themselves. For example, the time that it takes to upload mapping, the need for us to have different kind of server operations to ensure that we minimize the time. However, I do want to say that on an offline mode, this particular device operates perfectly. And what I think our remediation engagement ought to involve, Chairperson, and this is, you know, again, something that we were able to do with party liaison committee members, is to have people having the actual units in their hands so that we can demonstrate how these things take place and so that members can feel comfortable. It seems to me, Chairperson, that it might really require some kind of face-to-face engagement between ourselves and the Honourable Members of the Committee so that our remediation measures as they are unfolding at the moment can be better and understood in the kind of detail that members need and want them to be understood, but also that there is the comfort that colleagues who are in the Commission can really engage with members, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, so that there is that comfort and understanding of the devices as they have served us up to now, but as we believe that they will serve us to great positive effect going forward. So I wanted to say, Chairperson, that as you said, we are confirming, and in our presentation, we've been at pains to affirm the important value of this device. And one of the clear values that is there is the fact that the device enables us to do exactly what Honourable Members were asking in relation to our, I think it was Honourable Kanyele was asking in relation to our engagement in schools and at tertiary institutions, whether or not these engagements are accompanied by registration events. Historically, prior to the BMD, this did happen on some very carefully scripted occasions, but we didn't have the kind of portability of that the device gives us, which we do have now. And as the acting CEO and the team will explain, the device now enables us to do exactly what the Honourable Khandile was talking about in our school's democracy development, democracy program as it's going forward at the moment, and particularly also on the tertiary, at the tertiary institution. So this is one of the examples of how the BMD can assist us. I think the second thing that I wanted just to place some emphasis on is the fact that the question was raised about whether or not the existence of, if we look at the rural population participation, given the fact that data is often more of a challenge there versus that in the urban areas, or more densely populated areas, you know, do we think that moving things into a more technical and potentially online environment can assist us? I think our answer is yes in two ways. One, it can assist us certainly in terms of efficiencies, such as the one I've just mentioned now with registration, but it can also increase our ability to do things with a lot more reliability and a lot more certainty going forward. And I think at a previous engagement with yourself, the CEO had mentioned, and I take the opportunity to mention again, that it's really vital for us to be looking at things like counting devices, which are really something that is very important for us to introduce into our systems to really make for things to be more effective. But to do that, honourable members, we do need to say to yourselves that in addition to looking at our remediation processes and how we are looking at the VMD's potential going forward, for us to once again engage on the issue of technology and elections with yourselves, because we need, as you've already pointed out, to be able to plan much more effectively going forward in advance of the 2024 election. I'm going to hand over to the acting CEO, but I did want to come back to one other point, and that is the issue of timing. Honourable members, with respect, the issue of timing is an issue that we raise not because it's in contradiction with the issue of being prepared. And the only way I can try and explain what it is that we're saying here is to give an analogy. If you take a situation where you are intending to prepare a meal, you may have all the ingredients known to you. You may even have something that is giving you a time frame. But if at the last minute you find that many of the ingredients that you have prepared in sequence to be ready for whatever it is that you're going to prepare are no longer the ones that you are able to use, maybe they were not delivered on time. Maybe if they were delivered, they're the wrong thing. You need to go and reappropriate those things in order to finish your preparations. It's exactly the same with an election timetable. If we reopen registration, it means we cannot finalize the voter's roll for inspection. Once we finalize the voter's roll for inspection, we have to wait before we can distribute a voter's roll that has been certified. All of these things have knock-on effects. That is why we provide usually for an 86-day timetable to allow those knock-on effects to go seamlessly. The reality is that if you have a 42-day timetable, that is what really makes things extremely difficult, including logistics including training, including setting up the different facilities that we need to. So I just want to say to members that in our engagement with yourselves, it seems to me that what could be very, very useful, because the question was asked by one of the honourable members about whether or not the 3 days to inspect the voter's roll is an adequate period of time. It was the Honourable Molekwa who asked that question. It may well be that we need to engage with you to look at things like that, and again, your input on the detail of how this election timetable is composed is something that we do engage with the party liaison committee, but it would be something that we believe would probably benefit also from your engaging, because it would give us a much more robust understanding. The acting CEO, I think, will come in on questions to do with how we can deal with disinformation, training and the like, and other questions, including the two Section 65 objections. What do we do? We certainly don't ignore a court order. And with your permission, Chairperson, I'm going to hand to the acting CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. The members of the Commission have traversed a number of things. I will underscore a few things without repeating matters that have been adequately dealt with. I do so for two reasons. One, to avoid any impression being created that the Commission was less than candid with the committee. Two, to avoid an impression that the Commission was inept in preparing for elections. So there are five things. The first thing deals with the time and the timing and the timetable issues. Again, to demonstrate that the Commission was not inept. Already in 2019, the Commission had agreed with the Minister responsible for COCTA, who has the responsibility to set a date and to call an election. In 2019, the Commission had already concluded consultations and agreed on a timeline for the election, and we're preparing for an election on that day. The Commission has had to change those plans because with the outset of COVID, the MDB suffered delays on its programs because it could not go into communities to consult on the draft votes. So the Commission amended its timetable to accommodate the MDB. The last point to be made on this point, Chair, is that you recall that on the 4th of August 2021, after consultation with the Commission, the Minister responsible for COCTA called the election for 27th of October and proclaimed those elections. The Commission was planning for those commissions, for those elections, which afforded us a timetable of 86 days. We know now that the Constitutional Court set that proclamation aside as unlawful, invalid, and unconstitutional, and replaced it with a 42-day timetable. So you had 86 days of planning. Those were changed to 42 days by external factors and not by the Commission. The second thing, Chair, deals with the VMD voters who do not find their details on the voters' roll and those type of issues. We do not take this lightly because it implicates the constitutional rights of franchise on the voter. But as Commissioner Muyoka says, we know we are dealing with a number of about 140,000 persons who have been so affected. How do we know? We know because where people, owing to the VMD not working or perception that the VMD was not working, were registered on manual papers, we uploaded those persons, and thanks to the VMD, those persons could find themselves on the voters' roll on voting day. Let me pointedly deal with the issues of the VMD. We accept that there were challenges, but the challenges are not related to the device, but rather the environment upon which that device operates. So the device operates as it expects, and the vote investment for the Electoral Commission and for the country. But in a minute or so, the difficulties that we faced with the the rolling out of the VMD. One was that we did not have a dry run ahead of the registration. Not because we did not plan for it, but it was a factor of the devices being delivered late owing to disrupted international logistics. So what we had to go on was the simulation. The simulation worked until in real life we realized their limitation, and these limitations were as follows. One was the network connectivity. We know we have unequal network coverage in the country. 3G, 5G in other areas, and in some other areas, they're still on 2G. So what was the challenge related to that? Is that while we had anticipated the unevenness of bandwidth, we provided the DMG to operate in online mode, which would have been the case in most urban areas where we have 4G and beyond, 3G and beyond. But we also expect it to operate in offline mode, where it loses connectivity or where there is not enough strength of the network. What the in-field testing showed us was that in doing so, we do not purposefully provide for a spectrum strength cutoff to say, BMG, you must look for network strength, but if there's no network strength, default to offline mode. So the VMD kept on and persisted to look for network, even where there was no network, and that created bottlenecks and the slowness that we experienced on voter registration. The second issue related to the fact that we shared infrastructure between the VMD, the online registration, and our own internal processes, particularly as it relates to mapping functionality. So on voter registration day, you had 38,000 VMD trying to search on the same database, and owing to configuration of our server infrastructure, bottlenecks were then created. We introduced new servers. We have disaggregated those servers so that the VMDs operate on dedicated servers. The online registration operates on their own dedicated servers, and our internal staff operate on their own dedicated servers, so that we free bandwidth to better support all those three areas of work. This was done ahead of the election, and we had an opportunity to have a driver across the country where we brought on board all presiding officers and their deputies with VMDs in hand to go to the voting station, and we sent instructions that they had to do transactions, and that gave us insight into how the VMD will operate, and it also confirmed that the intervention measures that we had done were going to hold on registration day. The last issue related to VMD was with the intensity of the mapping functionality that we had built into the VMD to make it easier for people to find their areas of registration. And it's important because we did not want to introduce a legal amendment that was not authorized by Parliament. Because Parliament has never required that the person must provide proof of address or an address when they register. So the layers of maps was intended to facilitate the registration of persons, be they in affluent areas or be they in underdevelopment areas. Be it a person who, owing to circumstances, find themselves homeless, or a person with a proper address in a well-developed and built-up area. So the issue of multiple layers, we had about 11 layers of maps, and those made the system slow, because even where a person gave us the proper address, we still wanted it to go through various gates, and we realized in hindsight that was not an optimum specification, and we've reduced those layers of maps, and as a result, we freed capacity, processing capacity, and processing speed, and the VMDs can work with much higher speed. The reality that we must confront is, however, that these allegations that people have been misplaced are not always true. And in the context of the VMD and the intelligence that the VMD gives us, we are going to have to confront those issues going into the future. Honorable Lukwasa made an example of the by-election on the 4th. I presume, Honorable Lukwata, you're referring to Ward 5 in Mahike. And that illustrates the point very well. People have been voting at the voting station over a number of elections, but that station is not the correct station because of the address. So when these people went to update their registration details before the by-election, sometime this year after the election in November, because we have now a VMD, an intelligence on the VMD, the VMD tells us this person has always voted in this ward, but there is no relationship between the ward and the address that the person has provided. What do you do in that instance? And keeping true to Mhlophe and come in the electoral court is that a person must be kept out from participating in an election in which their address is not located. So in those instances, we update those persons' registration to reflect their new ward. So while their preference is to vote in Station X, they must in fact vote in Station Y. And those persons have been persistent coming to the Electoral Commission to complain about the reality that we can't do much about because we are implementing the outcome of the law. So there will be instances as we use the VMD more often that we find those things. For an example, on voter registration day, I find myself in Centurion, but I live in Soweto. I'm on work. I can go into a station in Centurion and provide them my home address, which is Soweto. The VMD will default my registration, not in Centurion. It will default me to a VD and voting station that is linked to my address. So that is the intelligence that we have that we never had hitherto. Because in the past, the registration was driven by the VD. A person presented themselves only at the focus station in which their address was located. And when we registered them, we defaulted them at the station at which they presented themselves. There were objections that people came to the commission to say, I applied for registration at that station, but I've been registered elsewhere. And when you look at the address, you see, but this is correct. Your address has no relationship with the station at which you presented for registration. A concluding remark on this thing is that the issue is not the VMD. The VMD works as it's meant to do. The issues, the challenges that we've identified were around the operating environment, and we have resolved those to a key effect. The third thing, Chair, relates to training, recruitment, and electoral staff. Commissioner Masuku dealt with this adequately. Just one thing, two things to underscore, that with each election, we go on a new recruitment drive. So there are no presiding officers for life, because after an election, we review their performance, and we either take a decision to demote them in future if we hire them based on their performance, or if they did aberrations that are related to the results, we have the capability to blacklist their ID number so that they cannot be electoral staff anywhere again in the country. So those things are purposeful to increase the credibility of elections. The third point is that once a person has been recruited and trained, they must sit for an assessment. And if they can't attain a score of 80 and above, they are not assigned to a voting station as a presiding officer. They may be assigned a lesser role. The third and last point of this one is that before we confirm those persons, at least the three key people in the station, presiding officer, deputy presiding officer, and a voter's roll officer, we present their names to the municipal party liaison committees for parties represented there to object to their deployment. And if those objections are sustained, the persons are removed from the list of electoral staff. Why do we do that? We do that in order to establish the political acceptability of those persons and whether they're acceptable to political stakeholders. Because you do not want a person who circulates party pamphlets in the morning, in the afternoon, is engaged in the electoral staff. The fourth thing, Chair, relates to communication. And here there were suggestions that are well noted. We accept them. The suggestion to use the SMS. We are already using it, albeit on a targeted basis for re-registration, where the ward has changed, or and those type of things. So it is a good suggestion. We will look into it. The only reason that we do not use it find across all our communication was that it does not offer us the interaction with the voter. So it is one-way communication. We have the WhatsApp chatbot, which we do, which offers us interactive responses. And efforts to further enhance and popularize the app for disinformation and misinformation, we accept that, and we will include more profiling of that app and those type of things. The last point was related to Section 65 objections. Without going into the specific cases, as a matter of principle, the law provides that even after the commission has declared results, there may be a party who is adrift and who is able to adduce evidence to show that the elections could be materially impacted by the objection. In those cases, the court, if it rules, will correct the election, but in a number of cases, the commission has, of its own will, also looked at those complaints and ordered that the declared results be corrected to reflect the proper result. That could be as a result of a recount, or it could be as a result of improper capturing of a result, which is obviously an error. And in those cases, we do not persist with an injustice. The commission orders that the results are amended to reflect the wishes of the voter in those wards and in those municipalities. Chair, thank you very much. That concludes my input.
No, thank you very much, Deputy CEO. What we'll do, I'm going to just 10 minutes to give members for follow-ups or any issue that they want to submit. And I think there are many issues that we were dealt with. I know that there's a consensus that we must have a deep breath to deal with the more issues on the election, perhaps also to propose certain issues which I think has been raised by members. And as we go to the 2024 local government election, I think we're also taking note that the party liaison committee represented by political parties where issues are raised and interacted with. I think that the structure that also assists us as the committee and the Home Affairs and the NIEC to navigate some of the issues that we are raising to this meeting. Members, I'm going to give each 2 minutes if there's any matter for noting or to raise, then we'll go to the next item. I'm deliberately inviting you again, noting the issues that you have raised and the responses that were provided adequately with the IEC. Honorable Pile?
Chairperson, no, nothing else.
Honorable Ross? Honorable Tito? Honorable Mulekwa?
Thank you, Professor. I'm a chair.
Honorable Kanyere?
Thank you, Chairperson. I know actually the responses that we have received from the IEC. However, I wish to re-emphasize on the issues of people that registered and were turned away, because if I'm noting the response from IEC, they are mentioning that it is 140,000 people that were captured manually, and then they were captured later on the device and they were able to vote. And we are members of parliament from various provinces and areas as well, and we are all saying in one language. We were at the VDs and people were turned away because they were not appearing on the voters' roll. So I am pleading with the IEC to go back and relook at this matter so that we can be able to deal with it in the upcoming elections. Because if we just accept that this matter was dealt with, it would mean it's going to keep occurring. The last matter that I am having, that I have picked up also from the responses, it is that people were incorrectly registered. So that is why they wanted to keep on voting in the same video. On the message that I was referring to earlier on, I remember there's one Baba Omdala that I captured some of his wife. Yeah? He resides in Ward 5. He says Mending. But he could not appear on the voter's roll. When we checked online, he was registered to vote in a different section at Jabavu, that is in Ward 6. So I am pleading with the IEC to double check that the people are actually registered correctly and that they are captured correctly to avoid the same occurrences going forward. Then thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ramonobe. Honorable Ramulobe. I think Dr. Masuku re-emphasizing that. Honorable there. Honorable Lizelle. Honorable Lepape.
Sorry, Chair. No, sorry, Chair. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was struggling to unmute. No, Chairperson, I would like to thank the IEC for that comprehensive answers that they gave us. And I think it's an ongoing discussion between us and the IEC in the lead up to 2024. And just to emphasize that I think this type of debrief would be very important, and I hope that our committee staff and yourself will prioritize that. I think there are some few questions that were not answered, but I can always submit that in written form. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Lepata.
Thank you, Chair. We have consensus made that we will have more sessions with the IEC. One is clarified and OK for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Love and Commissioner Mieta and Commissioner Masuku. I want us to deal just in 3 minutes on the matter of 140 votes. We must not go out of this committee, or the narrative must not ground that there are no person who has not participated, even if the initiative was created. And we note that there are those that could not participate. And I'm raising this point that this 140 need to be adequately, properly be understood, so that our articulation as members and everyone to constituency, even our people, are able to be on the same page on that point. Then we take a summary on how we'll call the IEC on the subject. Just on that matter, Commissioner Lap and Commissioner Mirza, Dr. Masuku. Commissioner Lap?
Chairperson, I think I can answer for all of us. I think what would be quite useful on the question of the 140,000 would for us to provide you with a written note about the issues of people who were whose information was captured in writing, how that was captured in the system, and the issue of concerns that were picked up, which caused us to, as you know, to capture some people whose information had not transmitted through to the voters' roll, that enabled us to do that on election day. What my suggestion is, Chairperson, rather than try and summarize all of that now, is we give you something that is a short note to actually listen that number so that you have it, and it's not, it's not something that we debate. Two other things, Chair, that I wanted to really urge colleagues and honourable members to engage with your colleagues is around the fact that our registration process is open right now. So we really ask that in helping us to make sure that any of the gaps that existed, or even the concerns that exist now, such as those identified by Honourable Kanyele, people can be urged to go online and even supported to go online to check and confirm their details. It's possible at any stage. Registration is now an ongoing process. And lastly, Chair, the issue was asked about what we are doing in terms of intra and inter-party conflict. And I think that that's something, again, we can give you a written note on so that we don't take further time. On behalf of the Commission, though, I do want to really appreciate the the engagement by the honourable members, the willingness to further engage with us, and I hope that you will follow up potentially in person engagement with us, and we really do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Lapa, Commissioner Moyeta, Commissioner Masuku, the Deputy CEO, Mr. Shiburi, and your entire team for presenting the local government election report, giving opportunity for honorable members to interact with their thoughts, raise some of the issues which are concerns of the public, and also make recommendations on how henceforth we must be able to engage, but pay more specific issues that the IEC has to must look so that we're able to improve our work, particularly as we're going to conduct by-elections throughout this year, and also the preparing for the 2024 elections. The committee has accepted the report, and noting some of the issues which we have agreed on in terms of the recommendations. We've also noting the good work that the former Deputy Chief Justice in Seneca has interacted with in terms of the process towards the local government election. I think we must appreciate the work that has gone into the efforts that have been made by former Deputy Chief Justice and his team. And I think the decision of the IEC to consider to solicit an independent a process that was led by the former Deputy Chief Justice in Seneca. The entire team of commissioners were running the election at a short space of time, but also with the challenges that the country has been confronted with, the COVID challenges, and I think we appreciate the work that you're doing. The committee will be closer with yourself in terms of the issues that we've agreed on here or are proposed by members of the honorable members. We take more appreciation to the party liaison office that it continuously interacts with the IEC, that make it work easier. And I think from the various political parties where we serve, we do receive a briefing and issues that are emanating from your, the IEC and the work that I think we must appreciate the stakeholders that you are working with. I think Honorable Pile raised an issue earlier on the continuous from other sectors. It may be political parties or NGOs that continue to build a narrative to discredit the work of the IEC. And I think we must come closer to that matter, that we affirm the independence of the IEC, the work that the IEC is doing, where there are challenges. We know that the structure that are reported, as you do now, that has been reported to the portfolio committee, party liaison officer, a committee, and other institutions that the IEC do come closer to interact. So I think we must be firm on that narrative, and I think we must not allow that narrative to grow, because the IEC post, and I've indicated earlier, post 1994, by assuming their responsibility to facilitate the election, the weaknesses, and there was legislative improvement in terms of how the IEC must carry its responsibility. And we take note, Deputy CEO, that we have sharply raised that matter with the committee. And I think here, members of the committee and all the institutions that we've been dealing with, we must be able to create more awareness in terms of the work that the IEC is doing, so that anyone, whether political parties or NGOs, who has a matter with the IEC must approach institutions or that have been created to be able to preside over those elections. I'm raising this because in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I read that the IEC is corrupt to the core. There's a member of society was on the podium that created aspersions to the IEC, and this matter came to the attention of the committee. And we want to encourage that if there's any other matter that related to corrupt activities of the IEC, that member of society or a political party must approach the institution that will be able to interface with the matter that she or he
is raising on the public. We're now appreciating that you are taking responsibility, I see, on some of the weaknesses that occurred during the election, including the devices, including the challenges that you have expressly interacted with the committee, and the corrective measures that as we move forward, we'll be able to interface with. The last point, we agree and resolve that the debriefing session will assist better so that we deal comprehensively with the issues that the members raise concerns, and the members will be able to assist our public and the institution to do better. But I think overall, thanks for your good work. The report has been tabled, accepted. We've noted the challenges, and I think the recommendations are clear on how the committee and the IEC will collectively work together. And thanks to the collective team of your commission, Commissioner Mashinini, Commissioner Lab, Commissioner Masuku, Commissioner Tele, and Commissioner Miata, and Mr. Mamabolo and Mr. Chiburu, and the entire component of IEC for presiding over the local government, 2021 local government election, and the outcome that we declared free and fair. Thank you very much. We're now going to the next item. I'm going to invite the next item, as it has been dealt with. We, as you know, that the term of the IEC commissioner, I must emphasize that, Commissioner Mashinini, who was appointed to chair the commission by the president, has ended. And the invitation was issued for those who are interested to serve in the IEC by the Chief Justice. Interviews were conducted, and we took an opportunity to go back and observe or watch the proceeding of the interviews. There were shortlisted candidates which they were interviewed. And I'm sure that there were many interested parties or interested individuals that they applied. The interviews was concluded, and sufficiently members, those that were invited, presented themselves, and the report was sent to the Speaker of the National Assembly, and the Speaker did refer the report to the Committee on Home Affairs to finalize the process and interact with the recommendations. The committee sends members on the 14th of April their report. All of us received the report. And then the 20th of April again, and to interact with the process. On the 6th of May was recent to members. We also invited the content advisor to come and brief the committee. And we did in that meeting that the members must go back and work, look on all the issues that have been presented before us, consult further, or are able to interact with this matter. And we've even requested in the last meeting that members must have an opportunity again to go and do further consultation on this process. We're expected to deliberate, and I think Mr. Matunzi will outline the process, and then I will invite members to interact. We have went through even the previous report and this report so that members are able to inform on the process. Once the process has been concluded, we'll recommend a name to National Assembly of a commissioner that must be recommended to the IEC, I mean to the president. And the president that has a prerogative to can appoint in terms of the brief which was indicted the chairperson. Now the role of the committee is not only also to reopen the interviews because that has been conducted and it was sufficiently been briefed. And once the National Assembly received the report, debated and sent for the president to consider to appoint a commissioner who would have been recommended to be chair. At this point, I'm going to invite Mr. Matunzi to outline the process and interact with the IT. Mr. Matunzi?
Hi, good day, Chairperson. Yes, Jefferson, you have summarized the background to the issue of the appointment of the commissioner of the IEC. So, like as you indicated, on the meeting of the 10th of May, the content advisor did go through the report of the report from the Chief Justice on each candidate. There were about nine candidates there. So what is going to happen now, I think what we need to do, the committee needs to nominate a candidate, and then and that candidate will be the one that will be sent to the National Assembly. So in other words, we'll also have to have a report that will be sent to the National Assembly, and then that report will be sent to the President for the appointment of that commission. So for now, I think members will need to go ahead and nominate and motivate their preferred candidates, and then we have to come to an agreement. And then if it is possible that we do it today, we have developed a generic report that we can just insert the name of the candidate today or any other day. And then from there, the report is adopted by the committee and then sent to the National Assembly. That will be the process, Chair.
Thank you very much. That is the process that we are going to engage on the committee, and I will invite the comments on the issues with the following members. In terms, I'll invite members to interact with the report of the Chief Justice. We've gone through the CV, and they were clearer in terms of those credible candidates that participated in the election, in the interviews, and all of them were sent to us and were able to interface with them. Can I invite members, Honorable Tide, Honorable Rose, Honorable Tito, Honorable Mulekwa, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Ramurubing, Honorable Izel, and Honorable Pastor. Honorable Tide.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you once again. Chair, having gone through all of the themes and submissions, and I've also had the opportunity to watch some of the interviews, I want to strongly recommend, Chair, and let me first give you my reason as to why, and then I'll give you a name. Firstly, we have to undertake quite a difficult period for the last election in terms of local government election, in that we had to adapt to the new normal, we had COVID challenges, lockdown, we had a court case, and then we had the Constitutional Court ruling that the elections must continue. And even with all of these challenges, we've just heard from the report that was presented before us how the IEC was able to achieve the mandate. Chairperson, can I be protected?
Yes. Let me intervene. Honorable Tito, if you can mute your... Yes. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Honorable Tito. Sorry, Honorable Pile. You can continue.
Thank you very much, Chair. And so in saying that, we have seen that the IEC has been able to deliver an election. And key to this, and very important, is the person that was leading this process. In saying so, for me, the driving seat was being held by Mr. Glenn Mashlin. Now, I want to strongly recommend, Chair, that in light of him having had the experience, and I'm going to outline a few things, he for me is the most suitable candidate from all candidates. And I'm not saying this because I find any less in other candidates, but I'm basing this strongly on the experience
while other candidates may have qualifications, but they do not extensively have the experience of running elections. Now, this candidate has served as the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer, and the roles and responsibilities included the administration and establishment of the national head office, and also oversight in terms of all 9 provincial electoral offices. I want to refer to you, Chair, a comment made by Professor Mpunu, who is the former CEO of the IEC, in that he said, and I quote, "The highlight of the IEC national mission was that throughout the period of service, Glenn's administration had a clean, professional record, no single Auditor General qualification or adverse report in the 3 years of successive service." Now, Chair, I believe strongly that if something is working, there is no need to replace it. And hence, having had gone through this extensively, I think that the candidate, Mr. Mashkinini, has extensive knowledge and experience of both local government, provincial government, and national government. He also has an international imprint in that he completed his tertiary studies at the Curtin University in Australia. But here's my final parting motivation, Chair. Having undergone the process of the Electoral Amendment Bill as this committee, we have seen that there are going to be major changes in terms of the provincial and national elections, in terms of our 2024 elections. In that, we're going to include independent candidates. And I believe that the best person suited to be able to take us to the 2024 election will be Mr. Mashinini, based on the fact that he understands. Imagine bringing somebody new to run a 2024 election, having gone through this process. And it's going to be difficult to be able to, in a space of 2 years, and I'll say 1 year, because you have to start preparing for 2024. It'll be difficult to get a new person at the helm of the IEC to be able to run that 2024 election, giving into consideration that we have to ensure that the changes are made in terms of the Electoral Amendment Bill. And for that reason, Chair, I strongly recommend that Mr. Glenn Mashinini is the candidate that should be recommended. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pile, for your contributions and submissions. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will defer to Honorable Kanyile to give the DA's position. But certainly, I think, you know, we need to consider that, that we should at least have watched all the interviews before we make a decision, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ruas. Honorable Peter.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, from this time, can you give me a chance so that I must also go and consult with my political party, and then I will also write my submission on the candidate. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think Honorable Clay and Mr. Bates and give tangible reasons on why we should retain the person of the IEC. So I think I agree as recommended by Honorable Pile. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Chairperson, I think I share the same sentiment with Honorable Dido. Initially, this matter was scheduled to sit or discuss on the 27th of May, and with all the mini plenaries that has been happening in between, though I indicated earlier on that I also did have a chance to look at the interviews, but I am not finished because that interview took about 7 hours. So what we are requesting is more time to do our work on our side as well, do our own checks, and maybe discuss this matter in the next sitting or in the next portfolio committee sitting or on the 27th as it was initially scheduled. We would truly appreciate if you can consider our request, Chairperson, because we do want to make an informed decision as well. Thank you very much.
Honorable, thank you very much. Contribution, Honorable Ramalho.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, Honorable Clay already has motivated enough and spent a mouthful. I would like to concur with the submission that we recommend Mr. Mashinini to retain, especially since he is quite familiar with the process of IEC and elections. So it will be in the best interest of the country to have someone that is quite familiar with the process, Chair. But I will end there. I don't know whether we should speak to, or are we allowed to speak or engage on the matter of what Honorable Tito and Honorable Kanyile would have made suggestion of. I would take an advice from the Chair, if we're allowed, so that we then make submission for our views on it. Thank you.
If you have a view, we can contribute to that issue so that we don't take time.
Thanks, Chair. Bearing in mind that there is a view that we should, Honorable Kanyile and Honorable Tito are making a submission that they be given time to process this, bearing in mind that it touches the law and so on. I think we all were quite familiar and aware that there is this process that we need to engage on and we need to finalize on it. And I think it's within the best interest that the sooner we finalize on this matter, the better for us to be able to generate a report that must go to the House, table to the House for its final adoption, and so that the new commissioner can come in and start the process of working, especially bearing in mind the challenges or realities that we raise regarding or that are facing IEC, that requires to be resolved. 2024 is just around the corner, and the election process of 2024 doesn't start in 2024, starts in 2023. So the sooner the work of the IEC starts to gear up, the better for us, so that we're able to have credible and solid, fair elections. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ramalho. Honorable Lizette.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity. I've listened very carefully to what the Honorable Pillay said, and Honorable Pillay now advances the point that, you know, Dr. Mashinini, or you know, he's got experience, and nobody can discount that. But one must also remember that we just had a presentation where the IEC themselves have highlighted the fact that one of the critical concerns is the very low turnout of youth, the low voter participation amongst the youth, and we're a very young population. Now, amongst those candidates, there are people who are youth activists who work in the education field, in civic education, in teaching people about elections and why their vote matters. So really, I would like to say that unless there's a specific rush to complete this work, I would like to concur and agree with Honorable Tito and Honorable Kanyile. It's not that we have not started the work. I, for one, did consult my caucus yesterday. But, of course, it's difficult to consult your caucus or give them an input when you haven't watched all the interviews. And, unfortunately, some of us serve on multiple portfolio committees. I, for one, currently am pleased to proceed with the Children's Amendment Bill. And I would like to finish watching those interviews over the weekend before I can make a final recommendation to my caucus. So I would really like to appeal that we support the proposal by Honorable Kanyile and Tito that we deal with it on the 27th of May, which was originally programmed, so that we can do justice to this process, and that we don't just go for a candidate that we know, but that we make sure that we are recommending the best person for the job and somebody that can take the IEC into the future and also make sure that it addresses all of the critical challenges that it currently sees with. So that would be my input, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
contact. Can I speak, please? Is Honorable Tito?
You want to speak before Honorable Fatou or now?
Yes. I just wanted you to note that there is our honorable member, Commissioner Martin Kamini. He's also inside the portfolio committee. Can you also please give him a chance to speak, please, Chair? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tito. Honorable Marshall, you are welcome. Also our former chair, Honorable Bongo, you are welcome. I'm going to give the Honorable Lekwase, then I will invite Honorable Masha.
Thank you very much, Chair. I heard what my colleagues on the platform are saying and would not want to get to a point where we make the argument around the name. I'm going to suggest that even when we request or make a suggestion on the postponement of what needs to be done today to the 27th, we must not try in any way to dislobby the candidates that is already been suggested by Honorable Pillay. I hear my colleague, Honorable Lizelle, I don't know if I heard her correctly, saying that we must do justice to the process and we must not only recommend a person that we think we know or that we know. We must make sure that the decision that we take is the decision that will be best for the country or for whatever that she said. But I'm saying to you, Chair, the recommendation by Honorable Pillay is a recommendation by Honorable Pillay. If you think that a person that is being nominated or that is being proposed by one member is not the best, please let's not go to an extent of saying it now, especially that you have not yet completed the consultations or the researches or the investigations with whoever that you had to do that with. So I'm saying, Chair, as we are sitting, I'm boldly going to say on behalf of the ANC, the recommendation that Honorable Pillay has made, we concur with those recommendations. And where we are sitting, having gone through the consultation process with the party, having gone through the interviews or watched the interviews, we say with the experience that he has and with the current situation that we have, we are busy with the amendment of the Act. We are going to one of the difficult elections where independent candidates will be participating in the national election, which will be our first experience as a country. So we will need a very experienced somebody who can do the job. And as the ANC, where we are sitting, we feel that the best candidate for the position is Mr. Mashinini. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lekwase, Honorable Lamin. Honorable Damien, Honorable Tito.
Yes, Chair, he's coming in.
But you said he's in the meeting, I can see, Okay. Members, it is clearer that we are... I think we must appreciate the process which was made, and I want to caution members not to bring issues which are not or were not adopted as a process. We noted that the Speaker referred the matter before the portfolio committee.
we requested the team, the secretariat or the content advisor to table the matter before the committee for noting. And we said to the portfolio committee, we are requesting members to go and consult on this matter. We even said, we are requesting members to go and watch in, as part of the consultation on two issues. The interviews conducted by the Chief Justice, if you have not watched them, or the team or the team that you are consulting or the party. Secondly, there are CVs which are public that you must interact with. That's our summary in the first interaction. And we have said that we're scheduling this item on this particular day, which was. We came back to the portfolio committee again and said that because of the issues that we're dealing with of the electoral amendment, the main court decided to shift the date and give more time to members to go and consult and come back to the portfolio committee to deal with this. We have even said that we, because the date of the deliberation and adoption was scheduled at a particular date, we are taking it, we are extending that date until we revisited the date of the 27th to this day to deal with this matter. Now, I want all of us to have, at all times, when the committee deals with issues in terms of the process, we must appreciate that this is the committee meeting where all of us must be able to, if there are challenges on the decision at a particular time, members must raise and articulate the position in terms of the process. And we must not wait until the item is on the table to come and raise issues with the interpretation that this process was not adopted by us. I think it must be clearer from that court that we as members of the committee, we know the fact that there are certain processes that the party will belong to, the ANC, the EFF, IFP, the DA, where members are participating in this matter and other political parties in the National Assembly. A consultation, thorough consultation must be sought so that it's able to be a proper decision, even if there are different views in name in voting, but at least this. So that process was laid down that we must deal with. And I think members, we must appreciate that at a particular point. We must not raise issues as if this meeting did not define, articulate, and resolve on what we're going to engage on the process. We appreciate that there's a deliberation that was carried by the ANC has made its position that they are forwarding or not recommending Mr. Mashinini, and it's noted. And the other parties that are requesting to go do further consultation. Now, members, each and every committee meeting, I know, and you know all of us, that we do interact with the report in terms of the item that is going to be on the table. So I think we must all of us take that moment on a decision process, and we're not saying that members mustn't go and do better consultation. It's a point that we must be able to be concise on the issues that we as members of the committee will resolve for. And now that the matter has been tabled in this meeting, the ANC has tabled its position as part of contributing to the discourse and influence. In the next meeting, Mr. Matonzi, bring up a report of this deliberation and give members who are going to do further consultation as the request of the committee, and adopt the report to adopt, resolve on the recommendations, and so that we're able to send the report to the National Assembly
noting that the ANC has already made its position in this meeting. It is important that as a collective, we are able to have a point of agreement in terms of the process always which we're taking. The last point which I must caution is that all the candidates who are here, who have been submitted, they've went through the interviews, and members will be able to motivate, informed by the consultation, without necessarily rebuking candidates. And I think that's the spirit which we must hold, because we're here interfacing with the independent institution, which as it needs collective persons to be able to discharge its responsibility. So I think that is our summary in terms of how we're going to interact with it. Mr. Matonzi, you will
but
come
Chair, just on a point of order, I just want to clarify, because I'm hearing you also saying that now, and Honorable Lekwase also spoke to that. My point was not to delegitimize one candidate over another. I was simply saying, which is a fact, that there's one candidate which we all know very well. I wasn't saying that that candidate is not suitable, etc. So I would like for that to be corrected, because seemingly I was misunderstood.
No. I do not optimizing or she's arguing against the appointment. I'm making a statement that the candidate, which you have raised a point about a young person in the candidate, I'm saying the candidate, all of them which are submitted for the committee are credible. And members, in terms of the contribution to the discourse of this matter, we must able to rise to that occasion. I did not say, and I think the point that I must emphasize, you did not mention that or rebuke the contribution of Honorable Pide. You raised your point in the manner that this interview and the collage of your experience in terms of the issues that arise from this. I think that is the spirit in which we are raising the matter. Thank you. Honorable Kanyere? I see your hands.
Yes, thank you so much, Chairperson. Firstly, I'd like to appreciate the fact that you are considering our request. And secondly, I just want to re-emphasize that we'd like to view like the YouTube further. I think if you remember very well, in the previous meeting, I did indicate that I got a sense that the post was not giving us a direction in terms of how we were supposed to make a decision, because if maybe all the factors were clear, we wouldn't be able to do that. And then Adam advised that there is an interview on the YouTube. You also concurred to that and said we can go and watch them. So we are saying in between there's a lot of work and plenary meetings and everything. And another thing that we'd like to request from you, Che, is that in future, if there is a meeting that has taken place and we have confirmed the date, if the date has been changed, can we please be consulted? Because we normally get a schedule that the matter has not been scheduled, and we're under the impression that this matter was going to be on the 27th. Which was going to give us ample time to be able to prepare ourselves, to be able to make contributions. Thank you so much, Chair.
Issues, members. There's a structure which is called MENCO that solicits and assists each other to deal with the matters that must go to the committee. And that structure, members are invited. Mr. Matonzi, and who checked all our records. There's not any matter that goes to this table, members. We know that there's no process of the structure. We contribute, engage, we take the issues to the committee. There's no issue that just comes to the committee overnight. We do thorough consultation, and it's what we've been doing since the sixth parliament. In fact, even when Chairperson Honorable Bong
was still the chairman, they introduced this technique of consultation with members, because we are representing, when we're in the committee, we're in the collective, to run the affairs of the collective, of the committee, on behalf of the National Assembly. That's the point that we must emphasize. There's no decision that will proceed without that consultation. And we have moved since that established principle by Honorable Bongo, that it's important that all the decisions were taken in the members of the committee. We must consult. And I can confirm that to this date, we're able to deal with this consultation. Second point, the issue of viewing the interviews is not a matter we can raise now and today. I must emphasize. The interviews were public first. The YouTube is accessible, which we've raised when the matter was tabled in the committee. That let's go back, find time to interact with the YouTube. Mr. Sammo circulated also the YouTube. Also our responsibilities to find out, because that is part of enhancing the consultation for members to take property. But at this point, we can't come and raise this matter of a YouTube. We must table at the time that Mr. Sammo volunteers that this is a process that will take. But in the spirit, members, let those that have not done this startup process go back, all of us, and deal with this consultation. And in the next committee schedule meeting, we'll come and do further deliberation, take a decision on the issues. And we appreciate all members of the committee for the work that we are doing. We close on that matter that the Honorable Pile has made his position, contribution and submission, and Honorable Lokhase has also considered an Ramulobe. Is there any other matter outside this, Mr. Matunde? And Mr. Matunde at that point will come with a report of these deliberations on this matter, and further deliberation, then we take a decision, we do a recommendation. Is that our understanding, and Mr. Matunde?
Yes, Chairperson. Okay. And there's no other matter that I need to raise.
Okay. I'm sure that before we stand out of the meeting, initially, Honorable Tito has requested Honorable Marshall Lamin to contribute, but in the absence of that, is Mr. Honorable Lamin on the one to contribute so that we close the item?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think that the network is what dealing with you. It's not longer in here. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Tito, for that request, and for other members like Honorable Hendrik, when it's in the meeting, we do allow members to contribute. I want to thank all of you, Honorable members, for the contribution and interaction with the IEC on the report, and also thank you for interaction on this item of considering the nomination or recommending for a commissioner, and as a result that will in the next session finalize a next portfolio committee, finalize the recommendation of other members, as we have agreed that you will want further consult on the space. But it's our resolve that we must defend on our processing and consultation. On Tuesday, there's a debate, Honorable Mr. Matunzi, unless it has changed, and we take this opportunity to wish all of you members for the contributions to the debate that will be in our vote on Tuesday. Thanks, IEC, again, and thanks very much, members. If in the absence of Tina, there's no announcement, Mr. Matunzi?
No, there's no announcement, Chairman.
Okay. Thanks very much, members. We'll then join the mini plenary that I'll continue. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.